According to Lowell, we are to be nestled in 227. But then the venue was given to someone else. I don't know what meet it was. And they asked us to use this venue. And according to him, it's supposed to be a three-seater venue. As he discovered this morning, it's not a three-seater. Therefore, we are also being so squashed. But with the next meeting, the Honourable member, spoke to him because the venue for the next meeting is a bit small, next week's meeting. So we will be getting a bigger venue. And not the venue that you're going to, because it will be a higher education, basic education and higher education together for next week's meeting. And then I would like to apologize to our officials that they seem, you know, that you only got certain officials with you. And not all your officials. But at least there is gender equality, because I was worried about the gender. You know, there's at least two women and three men sitting at the table from the department. It's supposed to be 3-3, but I would like two people now. We are going through the quarterly report on the performance of the department. And as requested, we had it by Thursday, and then Llewellyn also put it onto the emails of the members. We noticed the report that the department is giving us this morning, the PowerPoint presentation. This one is about 125 pages. But the department shortened it down to 55 pages. So the department, the DG, will indicate to us, you know, where you are. Is that correct? As you go along. DG? Because if you've got a very version in front of us. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, all the slides that I'll be presenting are in big version. I thought it may be cumbersome for me to refer exactly where in the big version I am. So if honourable members could follow that. I'm just adding a few things here in terms of colours and so forth, which I would have spoken to verbally. But I did this in the interest of time, otherwise it would have taken too long to do the presentation.
I think you should take about, will you be able to take 3 quarters of an hour, or do you need an hour?
I'd love an hour.
Fine, I'll do an hour. Because it will be till 22:11 or 10:45, and from then the committee can ask questions on the report. Thanks a lot. Llewellyn, any apologies, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, we have received apologies from Honourable Mashishi, who won't be able to meet this morning, as well as Honourable Matisha, who is running a bit late. And of course, we have received apologies from both Minister and Deputy Minister.
Just have the apologies noted. And I'll hand over to you, Mr. Sobrine, the DG of our department. Is there a need for us to introduce ourselves? We only have one new member. And you can just give your name, a member, within the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Preeti Ngubeni Maluleka. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
And I'm sure you know the officials now. Because now you know the officials. I would like the officials just to start with the committee. That's the now exactly where they
are. Bobby Subayan, DG of Department of Basic Education.
Carol Mugali, Chief Director of Strategic Planning, Research and Coordination, Department of Basic Education.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Nsipho Mlelekwa, CFO in the Department.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Matanzi Mamweli, Acting DDG for Curriculum.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Perry Biachi, DDG Planning Information and Assessment.
Mr. Benjamin,
My name is Bala Fetchwek. I'm DVP for the Planning and Delivery Oversight Unit.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Gugundebe, CDC Social Mobilization and Support Service.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Yugesh Bana, Deputy Director of Strategic Planning and Support.
And then
good morning, sir. Good morning, PNG.
And next to PNG, institution,
My name is Mukulang Sibalo from Eco Education.
Apologies for being late. My name is Stephanie Ball. I'm a researcher at the University of Oxford.
You won't remember the name, but as you go along, you are doing our department of work on our stand card that demand is 4 hours. If it's an achieve last year, you'll see a big achieve. Thank you for
that. You might stop, Mr. Sabat.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I must apologize, I've got an acute case of rhinitis, and I thought if I can't cope during the course of the presentation, I'll hand over to Ms. Nuga Delwe on my left. But she's also got an acute case of rhinitis, so I'll have to soldier on irrespective of what happens. I do have a big box of tissues here to help me in the process. Honourable Members,
just a bit worried. Why have the Honourable Member, you have, and even your Chief of Staff? We are a bit worried now about that. But you may continue. I don't have rhinitis, whatever it is.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Members, we had to present the fourth quarterly report for 2012-13, that's ending end of March 2013. And as you know, we're reporting against the APP, which Honourable Members have seen right at the very beginning and then periodically during our quarterly reports. We also emphasize with all of these presentations that we in fact reporting on the indicators contained within the APP of the DBE, of the Department of Basic Education, and those relate to indicators that are confined to the budget and mandate of the DBE and not the entire sector. And therefore, Honourable Members will find indicators in this presentation that don't speak to the totality of the sector, and that's because it relates only to the Department of Basic Education. All provincial departments brought together in aggregate would account for the sector as a whole, and that's not the presentation that I'm making today. So if I can then proceed, I'm going to make the presentation in two parts, one on the performance indicators and secondly on the financial report. We ended out a very substantial presentation because we wanted to make available to Honourable Members as much detail as possible. However, it wouldn't have been practical to present all of those slides, and therefore we've extracted from that big presentation what we thought are the key slides. However, during question time, Honourable Members can refer to the bigger presentation and raise questions in relation to the bigger presentation or any other documents. The one that's being circulated now, is that the smaller presentation or the big one?
Smaller.
Is it the smaller one? Okay. So, the bigger one. Okay, that's the bigger one. It's double-sided. The bigger one is 100 and some slides. The smaller one is 55 slides. Yeah. 125 slides should be the bigger presentation. Okay. If I can then proceed with part A. All members will now be aware of our program structure, all of which are derived from the delivery agreement, which is outcome one of government's priorities, and that's improving the quality of basic education. It's also derived from the action plan. And programs are as follows: administration, curriculum policy support and monitoring, teachers, education, human resources, and institutional development, planning, information and assessment, education and enrichment services. And just to remind honorable members, this program structure drives the plan, i.e. the APP, and it drives the budget itself. So it's in line with the budget structure, and it's in line with the programs contained within our annual performance plan. Now, these are the targets that we have. Members will see that 9 are quarterly, 2 are biannual targets, 40 are annual, and that gives us a total of 51 targets altogether. Right at the very beginning, to indicate the performance of the department in relation to these targets, out of the targets I've mentioned, 24 have been exceeded, 8 have been achieved, almost on the head, 11 have been missed by a narrow margin, and 6 of the targets have not been achieved. For 2 of them, we don't have a benchmark established yet, and that's 4% of the target. So we have 24 and 8 achieved to exceed it, and then 11 and 16 not achieved, of which 11 are marginally not achieved. If you go then program 1, its purpose is to manage the department and provide strategic administrative support. And these are the targets now on the screen. The number of officials participating in staff development activities, the target was 280, but we've actually had 350 who attended skills development programs, so there we've exceeded the target. Number of internships, we've had 87 against a target of 55. We've exceeded it there. Percentage employed outcomes of interns, 39% were employed, and the target was 30%. So even though we exceeded the number of interns, we also exceeded the percentage of those employed. This is a very successful program, the internship program. In terms of report highlighting South Africa's role and participation in multilateral bodies, those reports were delivered, so that was achieved. In terms of the legal cases...
Do we have the smaller version? Do we have copies of it? You know, I think the point we are used in following the pages, I can see all of us, we are just... In as much as we have gone through this bigger one, but do we have anything on it, or we should just focus on the screen?
What is the smaller one?
May I propose that in the absence of copies, maybe it could be a bit slow. Then we can fall. But at the rate that you show us moving, that's a bit difficult.
We're organizing copies, but I don't know if I should continue in the meantime. I'm going to go to the slide, and what Carol will do is refer to the slide in the big presentation while we proceed. Okay, and then I'll do it much slower at this point in time until we get the presentation. Apologies for that.
In an hour.
Okay, so I've just done two slides now. Just to remind colleagues, the focus here is on branch A, and we're looking here at self-development, we're looking at internships, and we're looking at number of interns employed, and we're looking at reports. These were indicators given, and here we've exceeded the targets, or met or exceeded the targets. In this case, we've complied with the targets, and these are just reports themselves. So if I can go to program two, this is a very important program, curriculum policy support and monitoring. The purpose of program two is to develop curriculum and assessment policies and monitor and support their implementation. Now, the big thing about curriculum is the National Senior Certificate, and this slide was in the presentation, right? 23. Okay, so honorable members, what we do here is after supplementary exams been written, we reconcile the end of year 2012 results with supplementary of 2013. And you will see that the overall pass rate has increased from 73.9 to 75.6 now. Every year when we write supplementary, there is an improvement in the results. This year, the improvement was 1.7% variance between 2012 and supplementary 2013. And if you look there, Eastern Cape went up from 61.6 to 62.7, Free State 81.1 to 83.1, that's a 2% increase, Gauteng 83.9 to 83.3 minus 0.6, Gauteng had a decline, KZN 73.1 to 75, again 1.9, Limpopo had a massive increase, 66.9 to 70.8, that's 3.9% increase. So they're working through the 70% ceiling at the moment. And that is the issue, that all provinces should actually be above 70% in terms of their performance. We have gone from 70 to 71.9, Northwest 79.5 to 81.5%. Northern Cape 74.6 to 77.3, that's a 2.7% jump. Western Cape 82.8 to 85.2, 2.4%. So in aggregate, it's about 2% across, except for Limpopo, that had close to 4%, and then Eastern Cape 1.1%. So that's the aggregate results when one includes the supplementary examination. That gives you an indication of how the number of bachelors have climbed, and access to diplomas, etc. And you can see, I'm not going to go into line by line here, but you can see that with that improvement of about 2%, there's also been an improvement in quality, because we always measure quality by looking at access to bachelor studies. And you can see there that access to bachelor studies has improved. If we believe that this all goes well, and we're keeping our fingers crossed for the 2013 NSC examination at the end of this year. Now, if we look at gold in the supplementary exam, total number of kilograms that achieved the NSC has increased from 377,000 to 392,000. So 13,300 candidates have now been added to the number that has passed the National Senior Certificate. Obtaining bachelor's, there's admission to study, obtaining admission for a higher certificate study has increased by 9,600. Candidates can access diploma studies increased by 3,200, and those candidates can access bachelor studies have increased by 1,200. And the overall pass rate, as I indicated, is now 75.6. Now, if you look at the outputs here, number of schools with access to electronic content, the target was 1650, and the total number of schools is 4513. So that's a positive variance there. Number of digitized workbooks aligned, and our target there was to digitize two workbooks. It's a long, complex process. You've got to test it in field, and we managed to do four there. So we'll continue to do that. We want all our workbooks to be digitized. In terms of the e-education strategy, that strategy has been developed, but we're very careful here about effect on provincial budget. So one can just develop a strategy at national level and expect implementation at provincial level without doing a proper assessment of fiscal capacity and implementation capacity. And That is why the implementation plan itself is still under development. Number of faculty advisors and other teaching professionals oriented according to CAPS. A total of 4,000 teaching professionals were oriented to CAPS, and our target was 3,000. So we exceeded the target there by about 1,000. Number of personnel training, multi-grade teaching, obtained 151 out of a target of 140, so it's a positive one there. Percentage of grade 3 learners performing at required literacy level. Now, these indicators that follow are about learner performance. These are topic indicators. And just a reminder, under the amendments, we proceeded here from a very low baseline. And what the country did was to set fairly ambitious targets here, to say that the status quo was wholly unacceptable, and that needed at least 55% of the learners in grade 3 to have obtained the required performance level that's acceptable in terms of the curriculum. In the last year's ANA, our performance was way below the target. This year for grade 3, I'm sorry, for the 2012 grade 3, we exceeded the target by 2%, 57% of learners achieved about 50%, which is the mark we set. And that is positive in literacy. In numeracy as well, we set a target of 55%, however, 36% achieved, and therefore, even though we had an increase, we're still below the target there, but which actually indicates that we increased by about increased from a performance of 70% in 2011. In terms of grade 6 learners, the target there is 51, and in 2012, ANA 39% achieved that. So we underachieved there by 15%. Grade 6 learners required reaching the required level in mathematics. The target was 44%. In 2012, ANA 11% achieved that. So that's significantly below the target. That target was a stretch target. The performance is still way below at grade 6 level. The improvement is working itself through the system, but grade 6 has not yet reached the level of improvement like we've seen in the foundation phase. In terms of grade 9, language and mathematics, we have not yet established a baseline there because the assessments are new and we're waiting to develop a credible baseline in that area. However, in terms of the first cycle of ANA for grade 9, which will serve as the baseline, 39% of learners achieved about 50% in home language and 21% in first additional language. And in terms of grade 9, 2% of learners achieved about 50% in terms of mathematics. However, when we looked at the TIMSS results, the results were significantly better compared to ANA results for mathematics. And that gives us hope that we can improve on this baseline quite significantly. Number of grade 12 learners became eligible for bachelor's. The target was 149. In 2012, we achieved 136,000. Now, this is the target where we set an absolute number. This was in discussion with the presidency. And at the time we set an absolute number and not a percentage was when we assumed that the learner population will not decline. However, we've seen over the last few years that the learner population has declined, not because of dropout or anything like that, but because of demographic factors. There's been a decline in birth rate, etc. There's been policy implications in the system, like the aid of admission policy working through the system. And therefore, the number of learners in the cohort has decreased. And as a result, it's hard to achieve the target if you put it in absolute numbers. So even though the percentage to achieve bachelor's has increased, the absolute number is still below the target. So henceforth, Honorable Chairperson, we will be presenting the percentage because we believe it's a more accurate measure of success in the system regarding this indicator. Similarly there, we set an absolute number of 169,000 passing mathematics, and in 2012 it was 121,000. Now, even though this was 70,000 more than 2011, it's still below the absolute number target. So physical science, the target was 177,000, and this is 13,000 more than what was achieved in 2011. However, it is still below the target that's set in the APP for 2012-13. After the supplementary exam, in the case of physical science, the figure increased to 110,004. In terms of percentage of learners who obtain a national senior certificate, our target for 2012-13 was 70%, and that was exceeded when the supplementary exam is now 75.6. So we believe that the targets that we've been set by our political principles for 2013 could be attainable, and we remain cautiously optimistic there. Percentage of schools having access to library information services was 61%. For the latest available data, it's now 51%, so it's still below what the target is, and there's various strategies that's being introduced to improve access, and you see already that the access is improving. And this information that I'm quoting comes from the school monitoring survey of 2011. So therefore, if you look at 2012-13, the figure is likely to be higher than what's indicated in this report. We're planning to do a school monitoring survey this year. We're running into financial problems, but we're trying very hard to get the money to be able to do that so that we can collect data, more recent data on that matter. A percentage of learners with a textbook for each subject, the target was 85%. The focus on 2012 has been on textbooks ordered and delivered by provincial education departments, in particular as far as the CAPS implementation rates are concerned. It cannot be reported that 99.4% of grade 4 to 6 and grade 11 orders were delivered to schools for utilization by learners. And with this, coverage has improved dramatically. If we look at data for 2011, it shows that in 2011 already, the coverage improved very dramatically. Therefore, if you look at the current year, 2013, the figures would look much improved. And we're focusing here specifically on those phases, those grades, where we're implementing CAPS for the first time. In other grades, provinces are careful because those textbooks are going to change, and therefore they only focus on top-ups. But we continue here to have a problem in terms of textbook supply in their schools in the main do not implement a credible retrieval, textbook retrieval policy. And as a result, even though you buy, by the next year, you expect to have at least 80% of those books. You expect a 20% loss, which is high. 20% is generous, but you expect a maximum of a 20% loss. However, in many of our schools, the loss is significantly higher than that. In many schools, it's 100% loss. So you have to rebuy those books every year, which is a huge burden, unnecessary burden, and wastage on the state. So we are feeling very strong about the retrieval policy, working very aggressively to ensure that that policy is implemented through persuasion, but we will also hold people accountable because these are state resources, and if you spend money on replacing books which ought to be collected, you are taking that money away from other areas of the sector, which is already cash-strapped under huge pressure. So we want to implement that policy very strongly. And we believe that the target of one textbook per child subject is eminently attainable for the reason that our procurement systems have brought down prices of books dramatically, which allows us to buy more for the same money. Coupled with the retrieval system will assist in us achieving that goal. So we believe it is very achievable. The number of learners who received workbooks, we put it there at 10.3 million. And you see in 2013, the DBE printed workbooks for grade 1 to 6, home language, grade 1 to 3 in mathematics, in the language of learning and teaching, 4 to 9 maths in English and Afrikaans, 1 to 6 first additional language, 1 to 3 life skills. And all in all, 10.9 million learners received books. A total of about 53 million workbooks were distributed for the 2013 academic year. We must clarify this thing. It's for the 2013 academic year, which means we distributed it in 2012. Our distribution in 2013 is for the 2014 academic year. Sometimes there's confusion about that, and people say distribution is happening now. It's happening now for next year. The books for this year were distributed last year. Number of learners enrolled in Karagure, 630,000 was the target, 665 was achieved. Percentage of learners completing Karagure, the target was 83, and we have a completion rate of 93%, which is a very, very high completion rate for any program, especially if one looks at adult literacy. Globally, the completion rate there is very low. But we constantly evaluating the program to ensure that quality is adhered to as well. This is, by any measure, a very successful program in a very important area identified as a major priority by the government. Among the district officers, they have trained officials on the screening, identification, and assessment and support strategy. The target was 56 district officers that had been trained. Number of schools that have teachers trained in screening, identification, and assessment and support. There's a CS program. CS stands for Screening, Identification, Assessment, and Support. And that essentially is to identify at an early stage learners who have barriers to learning that can be mitigated in good time. The lesson is that the earlier you pick it up, the earlier you intervene, the much greater the chances of improving the opportunities for that child to meet their potential. So this is a very important program as part of our inclusive education strategy. The percentage of grade 1 learners who've received formal grade R, the target was 69. This one really far, far exceeded the target. We've got it at 87.8, although the various tests of Africa data put it higher than that figure. So, I mean, 87.8 is already very high. So this is a massive achievement. However, as we've repeatedly said, our focus here is on quality, and a number of initiatives are now underway to improve quality in this area. So we go to Program 3, which is Teachers, Education, Human Resources, and Institutional Development. The purpose of this program, Program 3, to promote quality teaching and institutional performance through the effective supply, development, and utilization of human resources. If we look at the outputs here, and honorable members will see that the DBE has a main function policy development, the establishment of frameworks for implementation plans, and so forth. And that is why you will find that in our APP, you have things like guides, like strategy documents, policy documents, and so forth, because it is indeed a core mandate of the department to develop these things, and it's that which our money is spent on. Comprehensive guides to available professional development programs is established on the National Department website. A catalog of 150 short courses offered by higher education institutions in priority subject areas have been developed and placed on the DB website and circulated to all stakeholders for placement. Teacher development courses in key subject areas are available at the NI National Institute for Curriculum and Professional Development. Courses in ICFAL across the system, foundation phase literacy and numeracy, intermediate and senior phase maths and science, further education and training maths and science and accounting are developed. ICFAL is English as additional language. DB has developed a short course of foundation phase and intermediate phase in English First Additional Language Collaboration with the British Council. Catalog of HEI short courses drawn up and placed on the website. First draft of diagnostic assessments are ready for piloting. So that's a progress there. Number of qualified teachers aged 30 and below entering the public service for the first time. This is a recruitment drive to bring in younger teachers because we have an aging population of about, if you take full-time teachers equivalent of about 340,000, close to about 150,000 falling to the age group of 40 to 49, if I remember the statistics correctly. So they're close to 50% in a 10-year band and aging. That means in 10 years' time, close to 50% of our teachers will be in the 50 to 59 age group. That means that age group is the age group where people start retiring. So it's something that is an urgent matter, and we've got to decrease the proportion of that bulge in relation to the rest of the system. That is why it's a key policy intervention to bring in younger teachers into the system. We therefore recruited 8,227, and that's a positive variance of 1,427. The number of bursaries awarded, our target was 11,500. We awarded 11,700. Percentage of honorary public schools where school governing body meets minimum criteria, the target was 60%. Cumulatively, 71% of schools were supported. Now, it's hard to supply data on school governing body that meets minimum criteria of effectiveness. This would be complex and very expensive assessment. and therefore our performance AUC is assessed in terms of supported. Percentage of schools participating in rating of support services of districts is being satisfactory. The target was 50%, but again, here the data is unavailable. We're trying to ensure that we get this data instrument to measure principal rating was rendered, read by district officers was not administered at this stage yet. We then go to program four. Is that a short presentation now? Okay. I'm on slide 28. The purpose of Program 4 is to promote quality and effective service delivery in the basic education system through planning, implementation, and assessment. A national report on learner performance in annual national assessment is released, and this report was printed. The Minister released the results on 3rd December 2012. The target for this indicator has been achieved. Now, this is just not a blind compliance. This report is a very powerful diagnostic tool which is used across the system to assess weaknesses and deficits that guide interventions, guide teacher development, and guide schools to understand where learners are experiencing serious challenges in terms of their learning. So this is a very, very important report. It's an integral part of the policy to conduct annual national assessments. And our emphasis at this point in time is on utilization of NR results. The percentage of schools targeted for the provision of exemplars and other tools to support ANA, our target is 40%. The DB produced 680 different exemplars in maths and languages for grade 1 to 6 and grade 9. These exemplars, as well as other ANA support materials, were distributed to schools and provincial education departments. A total of 22,141 schools received these support materials, which translates into 86% of the schools. So that is a target well achieved. Indeed, we want that baseline of about 86% to stay, and we want to have coverage of all schools who do ANA to actually get these materials. Percentage of schools targeted for the provision of exemplars and other tools to support national and certificate preparation. Time there was 40%. NSE exemplars for 2012-13 were developed in 8 subjects in grade 10, where CAPS was being implemented for the first time in 2012, and those are the subjects. These are provided to provincial education departments for dissemination to schools. We don't have data on how many schools they reach, but all provinces received the material. We rely on provinces to distribute it. But our feedback, without any scientific data, is that the distribution has been quite widespread. The National Technical Report on Learner Performance in Grade 12, this is, again, a very important report like the NR1. This report is developed every year. It's well used. And for the 2012 exam, it was developed as well and distributed. The percentage of schools complying with very basic level school infrastructure, our target was 92%. It was an incredibly high target for 2012-13. If you look at the state of infrastructure in the country, and as we implement, we're picking up more and more backlogs. So it was an extremely ambitious target that by 2012-13, 92% of the schools would have achieved the basic level of functionality. Our available data indicates 35%, and that's based on school monitoring survey. The 92% target was based on another data set, which was a self-reporting data set, and that explains why the target was set so high. But with school monitoring survey, we can confirm that the baseline is more like 55%, and therefore I'm going to say incrementally what is possible, taking into account a whole lot of factors, including the budgets, the state capacity to spend it, and capacity of the private sector, the availability of raw materials, the effectiveness of contractors in the different regions. What is realistic in terms of what can be achieved every year? And then that target can be more realistically set. Excuse me. I think a runny nose is the most undignified thing, especially when you present. The percentage of learners in schools that are funded at the minimum level, our target was 85%. In terms of the school management survey, though, we find that it's giving us a figure of 47%. And we believe that that baseline that we used originally was too high. In addition, many provinces that encountered financial problems these problems impacted on the level of funding available to schools. So clearly this is something we're monitoring very tightly. It's a provincial function. It's not something DBE decides to do or not do, but we want to monitor this very strongly because poor schools in particular, all schools, generally speaking, depend on the funding in accordance with policy for them to function properly. So this is a matter that continues to be a concern to us, and we will continue to monitor it very tightly. Percentage of schools that have acquired the full set of financial management responsibilities, 77% is the target. We now got a figure of 74% for the school monitoring survey, and we want that to increase. But let me also say that in assigning financial management responsibilities, you don't just do that blindly. In provinces where they did it without applying strict criteria, actually got into serious trouble, where the schools demonstrated that they did not have the capacity for independent financial management. And therefore, one's got to be very careful, make sure that you apply the criteria, and make sure that where the capacity is lacking, you implement programs to bring those schools up to speed in terms of the required capacity. Now, the percentage of 7 to 15-year-olds attending an education institution, yeah, our figures are 99.2. We're performing very well with participation. Percentage of children who turned 9 in the previous year who are currently enrolled in grade 4. Our figures target was 63, the achievement is 62. But honorable members, I want to pause on this one so that I can draw your attention to the importance of this indicator. You see, we set, and in fact, in this committee, the matter was raised a number of times, that we have a challenge of dropout, which we've got to monitor constantly. We can't focus purely on grade 12 results, because if you do, you don't have a sense of what's happening throughout the system. In order to deal with these matters, we did two things. One is we implemented assessment throughout the system at the end of each phase, which is the annual national assessment. Secondly, and this is where this indicator comes in, we want to measure whether there's repetition and dropout. And how do we do that? This indicator tells us that in terms of our age of admission, that when a child turns 9, that child ought to be in grade 4. So the majority of children are in grade 4 who's turning 9. It means your system is working more or less in accordance with a good repetition rate, and a dropout is low or lowering all the time. I don't know if that makes sense. This is an indicator that you use to check for repetition and dropout. Because if children are having a high NSC pass rate, in the meantime, children are falling out of the system. Now, again here, you can use your ELIS beta, and it won't tell you anything. Because there could be children out of school that you don't have a handle on. Therefore, we use general household survey data, which is Central Africa data. And therefore, we measure all children in the population who are 9. And we check how many of those are in school, and how many of those are in grade 4. So in other words, how many of the 9-year-olds in the population, according to that South Africa data, are in grade 4? And that gives you a sense of whether your system is healthy in terms of progression. And the target of 63% is high. Looks low, but it's high. Because some could be turning 10 while in grade 4. Some could be turning 8 while in grade 4. So those who are turning 9 must be in the majority. So 63 is a good figure to have there. And our achievement is 62%, which confirms that in our education schooling system, we don't have a very high problem of dropouts up to about grade 9, and we don't have a serious problem of repetition. Honorable Chairman, I hope that makes sense, but that's a very, very important indicator. But then we have children who turn 12 in the previous year who are currently enrolled in grade 7, same thing, and here it's 66.9%. So it's a very good figure there. It will never, I must repeat, it will never be 100%. Program 5, Educational Enrichment Services. The purpose of Program 5 is to develop policies and programs to improve the quality of learning in schools. The number of learners undergoing lab screening. Our target was a very, very ambitious target of 500,000. Our achievement was 652,000 learners in schools in all provinces undergoing screening. And here we work in partnership. We've got an agreement with the Department of Health, and the Department of Health does the screening, and they provide us with statistics. And here we've exceeded the target. the number of learners who are provided with meals in the school nutrition program, number of public ordinary schools, school nutrition programs served. The target is 8.8 million, and we've achieved a figure of 9.1 million. This is very, very high for our country. We've only got a learner population of about 12 million, not only. Out of 12 million, 9 million receive a nutritious meal every school day. Number of public ordinary schools linked to local police station, target of 18,000, we've achieved 16.8, slightly below the target. And if you get a figure like that, it's more or less considered to be on target because there are a range of factors that will give you above or below. So it's not a significant variance. However, we want to increase that number in the new target. Number of public ordinary schools participating in the South African Schools Scholars Effort. A number targeted about 9.7 thousand, we achieved 8.8 thousand, so there's a slight variation there. In terms of public ordinary schools participating in school sport leagues, the target was 5,000, we've achieved 7,600 schools. Number of schools benefiting from Adopt a School program, this is part of it's a program located within the NEDLEC Accord. We targeted 357 schools and we achieved 415 schools. So that's the targets, the indicators, and the achievements. I will now go on to the financial report for Vote 15, Basic Education. Our total appropriation for the department in 2012-13 financial year amounts to 16.2 billion rand. The majority of the budget, though, 12 billion almost, consists of transfer payments, i.e. this is money that goes to the province, spent by the province, and the DBE manages it as an earmark grant, a conditional grant. So of the 12 billion, conditional grants make up 11.2 billion, transfers to public entities, 714 million, and other transfers, 20 million. The remainder of the budget, which is 4.223 billion, consists of the following. Compensation of employees, that's for DBE staff, 252 million. Examiners and moderators, 12.9 million. Earmark funds, 1.471 million. That's 1.5 billion, specifically and exclusively appropriated 2,065 million, departmental operations 264 million, departmental projects 156 million. You'll see that the amount of money available to the DBE is very small, and the amount of money available to the DBE for operations, Honorable Chair, is 264 million. And to repeat this here, the total expenditure in the sector is about 180 billion rand in the schooling system. For the DBE to pay salaries, it spends 252 million and then another 264 million on operations. So it's about 500 million that the DBE has available to it to pay salaries and for non-personnel funds. The rest of it is EMA grants and other things, examiners, etc., that the DBE appropriates, or it's appropriated on DBE's vote. The total actual expenditure of the department for the financial year amounts to 14.8 billion. The majority of the expenditure, about 11.9 billion, consists of transfer payments, and that's the amount indicated, which I've spoken to already. The remainder of the expenditure, about 2.8 billion, consists of compensation of employees. This is actual expenditure now, 246 million. Examiners, 12.6 million. EMS funds, 1.451 billion. Specifically and exclusively appropriated, 775 million. Departmental operations, 259 million. Departmental projects, 116 million. In terms of programs, the allocation against actual expenditure per program, you will see it on the screen, Honorable Members, and on your slides. The final appropriation in 2012-13 for administration was 322, actual expenditure 317, variance of 5.5 million. That's 98.3 expenditure. In terms of curriculum policy and support, 98%. Teachers, human resources, etc., 94.5%. Planning, information and assessment, 83%. Education enrichment services, 99.6%. The overall expenditure rate of the department as of the end of the financial year stood at 91.3%, and I will proceed to explain the reasons for the under expenditure where it's relevant. Allocation against actual expenditure per item
You will see for compensation employees, we spent 97.1, goods and services 96.5, interest, land, and rent 100%, transfers and subsidies 99.7, payment on capital assets 38.1%. Now, again, allocation of the 2012-13 financial year, the fund appropriation, actual expenditure and variance, and this gives you the percentages, and you will see now, if you look at most of them are 97% and above. The big problem is in the in-school infrastructure backlogs grant, and that's the CD grant, where the expenditure has been very low. And that has contributed to the overall under-expenditure of the department in the main, is the main one. And the other one, the project, but it's a very small amount there. It's only amount of 156 million that's appropriated. You will notice that if you work in basic education, 156 is a small amount. When I was dean of another department a few years ago, my entire budget was 15 million rand. But in DBE, because of the size of the sector, the expenditure is very, very high. If you look at EMA grants then, specifically the performance there, current good at 97%, EPWP, which is the EPWP part program of Greg Gure, where we appoint staff in terms of the EPWP program, 97.6. Curriculum review, 99.9. Workbooks, 100%. ITMS, 94. All of them are very high in terms of the expenditure. Conditional grants, EIG, which is the other infrastructure grant. That's not the CD. It's the one that we transfer to provinces. That stood at 99.7. School nutrition, 100%. HIV and AIDS, 97.1. General aid, 95. Technical secondary schools, recap, 94.9. Under expenditure there, but much smaller compared to a CD. Here's our transfers to public entities, and you can see here the figures are quite high. These are general transfers that we make. I won't go into detail on them. In terms of the reason for deviation then, in program one, underspending mainly due to savings with regard to office accommodation budget and university fee payments, which is based on consumer price index, which fluctuates. A further reason for underspending is a result of vacancies, which many were filled in the latter part of the financial year. In terms of curriculum, policy, support, and monitoring, underspending is mainly due to delays with regard to procurement of LTSM for Kari Gure. In this way, it was because the transfers for Kari Gure project resume in June annually. Teacher education, human resources, and institutional development. The other understanding is mainly due to two things, moderators appointed in respect of the IQMS are appointed on contract, and due to resignations, it's very difficult to keep 100% employment in this area. Late approval of the budget for the teacher training collaboration with the unions and sales spending there also contributed to underspending, but it's a very important project in terms of collaboration with unions. It's at its infancy stage, so we believe that with experience, the expenditure there will improve dramatically. Planning, information, and assessment, 83.8. And here, it's mainly due to the following. The approved allocation of 10 million rand per province to appoint environment support specialists to enhance capacity in infrastructure units. Provinces like Northern, KwaZulu-Natal, Northern Cape did not appoint, and therefore that led to underspending there. And then, of course, the CD, which is a school infrastructure backlogs card, underspent on the allocated budget as a result of capacity challenges among implementing agents and contractors. Subcontractors' contracts cancelled due to non-delivery. However, the effect of adverse weather conditions, poor road conditions, also contributed to slow delivery of the project. The educational enrichment, we had a 99.6 expenditure there. Underspending this area is due to funds withheld for HIV and AIDS, dental aid schools and technical schools conditional grant to Limpopo province due to low expenditure. Compensation of employees under expenditure year is as a result of the revised organizational structure of the department. However, most key posts were filled during the latter part of the financial year. Goods and services underspending can be attributed to change procurement model of LTSM in respect of Greg Gure, as well as budget approval for the training of teachers in the teacher collaboration framework, which was only received in October 2012. The project implementation resumed in January due to the October-November examinations, allowing a very short time for implementation before the end of the financial year. As a result, some programs continue into the new financial year. Due to the late start, invoices were still being received in the last week of the end of the financial year. And interest on land and building, we spent 100% there. Transfers and subsidies, the underspendings there was mainly due to conditional grants, HIV/AIDS, technical secondary schools recap, and Denaledi, as well as the education infrastructure grant of $10 million, which I spoke about. Payments on capital assets. The payment of capital assets underspending is mainly due to low spending on buildings and other fixed structures. Spending was lower than expected due to some contractors not delivering on projects allocated to them, and therefore the contracts were terminated. I spoke about this one in terms of the CD grant. Monitoring evaluation budget, administrative and financial systems are in place in the department to ensure that we monitor effectively. Expenditure is monitored on a monthly basis, and responsibility managers are requested to provide reasons if progress on projects is not satisfactory. The minister was informed on spending trends in terms of the PFMA. Senior management discusses the spending trends and reprioritization of activities when the objectives of the department are considered when necessary. Cost and containment measures are implemented, and when necessary, we transfer funding to areas where it's needed for expenditure purposes. In concluding, then, honourable chair and honourable members, the strategic interventions implemented during the 2012 academic year are being consolidated during 2013. The gains made, illustrated by the NSC and NR results, will be leveraged further to improve learner performance. Working collaboration with provincial education departments, in addition to teachers' text and time focus, will continue to be on, among others, the implementation of curriculum and assessment policy statements, as well as monitoring curriculum coverage to ensure outcomes are achieved, consolidating the WorkBoost program to monitoring utilization and providing support, enhancing teacher development and accountability through the implementation of the integrated strategic framework for teacher education and development and collaboration with unions, and using results from the annual national assessment and the national senior certificate exam to implement support that's needed to be provided to schools. We have reported on the indicators. The main indicators where our performance has been below what we expected is in terms of learner performance. This is a function of provinces, and we have devised interventions to focus particularly on those provinces that have serious challenges related to performance. But in particular now, we're focusing on those districts that have challenges in terms of performance. Our interventions are now evidence-based. It's linked to supporting all of those schools that have challenges around functionality, where functionality is not optimal, to ensure that all their basic provisioning is ensured, and that through support and accountability measures, performance improves. So in that way, we are trying to use the data to embark on interventions in a very targeted way that focuses on challenges that contribute to learner performance, whether it's the availability of teachers, whether it's the principals and their efficacy, whether it's support from the service, whether it's availability of infrastructure to ensure that these results improve. So indeed, those targets will continue to be stretch targets. In districts where it's being achieved, we have to strengthen it even further. But in districts where it's not being achieved, we are strengthening and targeting support to provinces so that we ensure across the country these targets are achieved. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Thanks a lot for this report. I'll open it for any questions. Members? Fine. I'll start with Honourable Member, Mulleke, and then Honourable Dina, Honourable Dikoko, Honourable Lagmo, Honourable Smile.
Thank you, Comrade
Honourable. No, Honourable Monshana, and I'm happy you're not sitting next to Honourable Dina. Oh. But I was a bit worried here with these two, but it's okay. These honourable members. Honourable Mushwana, yes, the two of you. And yes, the two Limpopo. And Honourable Hayako last. What? Fine, but you're going to be lost on what that is. On what member?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. First, I would like to appreciate the presentation by the department. I've got just a few questions. You haven't told us how many percent,
Then I'm like, decision, what's your few?
Five.
Mm-hmm. Let's like it. You keep one five, either. Now, just get the time.
Count on one end.
I will make a five each. I'm very happy because I'm told with the report there's going to be very few questions that I'm asking you asking such a lot. You may speak.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is on the batteries for Funda Lushaga. The target was 11.5, then the actual is 11.7, and the variance is 215. My understanding is that when you plan and put a target, that means the bursary is around, the budget is around the target. So if you exceed, maybe we can get an explanation where the extra money comes from to cover the excess of 250.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then the second one is on the slide 32,
mm-hmm.
where they're talking about the infrastructure of schools. They indicated that they targeted 92%, of which they said they were over-ambitious in that one. And now the new baseline is 55%.
Yes.
So I want to understand what informed the 92 initially. Because when planning, you have to do a need analysis first, and not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be able to see how much you'll be able to attend on a particular year. Maybe we can get information on that one too, that what informed the over ambition. And then even also on training of teachers, there's an acceleration there, which is good, but I want to check whether it didn't affect the budget for the training since they exceeded. My last one is almost the same as the one that I asked last week when we met the department on the lost books. I'm hoping maybe they've got an answer this week, that what happened to the money paid by the pupils who lost books, because they are always ready to pay back to schools whatever textbook they've lost, whether they've discovered what happened to that money, because there's an outcry that they always deliver almost 100% books each and every year because they can't retrieve all the books. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, frankly, it should be a comment, then I'll go to my questions. Chairperson, the comment will be, again, we always say this, I always say this every year, every quarter, that the department will always pardon us, and when they come here for the DBE quarterly report, that in no way where we can say we only focus on DBE without looking at the website. It's always a difficult thing to do, Chairperson. I know even now the questions that we'll be coming up with when we talk of the Department of Basic Education, we look at all the provinces, we look at what is happening at the DBE. So they will pardon us on that one. That is why we always will propose, Chairperson, that maybe we need a day where we'll have all the provinces together with the department, because there is no way where we can say we draw that line. It's quite difficult for us. Even in the presentation that they do themselves, this is where they take on the problem, because there is no way where we can say we're only focusing on DBE. It's quite a difficult thing to do. So that is why I'm preparing them to say, as we go to this question, definitely we'll be broad enough, we'll be looking at everything when it touches the issues of education. Yeah, check it in. I'm thankful again that I did not sit near Mponjan. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, but my first question will be, on Funza Lushaga Bazaar, Chairperson,
the outcry that is there is that the awarding of these bursaries is always late. You sit down with the Department of Higher Education and Training, that is the outcry, that's the complaint that they always have. The awards are around after July. What are we saying to the recipients? Most of them are talking of dropouts, even when it comes to their registration in various universities. And the blame always comes back to the Department of Basic Education as to say, yes, you do issue these bursaries, but very late, some even drop out, they cannot continue. So what is it? How can we change that? Making sure that by the beginning of the year, the students, the recipients receive their monies, and we can see the value for money for those who are receiving the bursaries, the Funds and Shaga bursaries, because as of now, there is a lot that we can talk of when it comes to that. Secondly, Chairperson, the district guide to monitor and support the schools, the way they perform. In the presentation, Chairperson, even the study that has been made through the schools, only 50% of schools are saying they do get the support and the guidance from the district. We always say the district offices are the weakest link that we have in our system. But I can see there are things that the department is trying to do, but we're not reaching a stage where we can say the district offices are up to the point where we wish to see them. What is happening? Really, we have a huge problem there. And let me go back to the question, Chairperson, that it's not for the first time I ask. When you look at the schools that are not performing well, more especially when it comes to metric results, the support that we get throughout the country, Chairperson, I don't even want to go back to the word of incubator, but that is what they're doing. Chairperson, we have got schools that have to start at 7 o'clock up until 4:30 every day and on Saturday. Are we still saying we are doing it? Are we still saying that's the correct route we are taking as a department? Because for me, I haven't seen the department intervening on that. I believe our learners still have time to relax, even the teachers themselves. But for them to just because they did not perform, to be terrorized the way they're doing, I don't see any good about that. You know, during the school visit in the beginning of the year, some of the teachers were telling us that it's supposed to be like this. Instead, the results improving, they're dropping. And one of the reasons, they will say, anyway, the department is telling us to teach throughout the day, weekends and whatever. Our children do not get time to rest, even the teachers. I still believe, as a department, you need to have something to say around that issue. It's not it. I think we are pressurizing them even more. Yes, they need to learn. Yes, they need more time. But the way it is happening, I think it is too much. But I'm subject to correction and discussion around that. Another one, Chairperson. I did not get that correctly. If you can go back to that slide. It was around the issue of metric pass. The targets, the absolute numbers versus the percentages, and the demographics and whatever. I was interested, but really I did not understand well. I know they've put the absolute numbers when it comes to that vis-a-vis the percentage and the dropping thereof, as to say when did they encounter the dropping. You know, maybe if you can go back to that slide and explain more, I can be happy to present. Yeah. On the issue of e-education or e-learning, it's one of the songs that we always sing again, Chairperson. And we know we have to look at the physical capacity, the implementation strategy and whatsoever. And we always have those targets, Chairperson, which I don't know in real terms whether any progress is being made when it comes to e-education. I know the Department of Communication is doing a lot, trying to connect the school and but I'm just reading, in this presentation, where we can get a clear picture where we are, what is it when we talk of education, are we making any progress? Because I don't see any. As we go around, we move around schools, we move around provinces, there is nothing of that education, but we always get the report on that. And it's one of the areas where we say maybe sit at that one room with the provinces. That is where we can even get a more clearer picture than the reports that we get visited here only with the DBE. I don't know if it's number four or number five, no. Yeah, I'm going to number four. Okay, thank you. Thank you, my neighbor. Chairperson.
Number four.
Oh. educated. Chairperson, on slide 45, we talk of the access to library information services. We're at 50% as the report that we're getting. I'm not saying I doubt it, but I'm not comfortable even with the 50% looking at what is happening in the schools out there. But again, if really that part of libraries can be intensified in our school, I think it can also have a positive impact even on the return of books, the books that are being given out to learners. You know, that culture of how to hand a book, I think that is where we could get how to become responsible when it comes to books, when you go to a library. I think that's how we were taught when we came out, when we were still at school. Really, because we'll never fight this, we'll never win this battle of returning of books, Honorable Chair and DJ. It's a huge battle that you are faced with. But the one on libraries, again, I think it will play a very important role in making sure that even these learners do respect the books, will know the value of the book, even that retrieval policy, if it is there, maybe a person is coming from there, you can, at the end of the year, that book that comes back, it's a book that cannot be reused again, even by another learner. So I think there's so much that we need to invest on when it comes to the issue of books, when it comes to the issue of libraries. Lastly, Chairperson, I'm very interested in the money given to various unions when it comes to the to teacher training. It is on slide, it's talking to the money given to various unions when it comes to teacher development. Yes. 118. I'm very interested, Chairperson, if the department can tell us how do they monitor that. We are talking a few amounts of money there, but when you go out you find that these trainings are not happening the way they are supposed to, but we really need to talk on to value for money. What is happening around there? Is the department satisfied with what is happening? Yes, we uploaded this move when it started, where teachers can talk to themselves, talk to each other, understanding their plights and whatever, but what can they say around this issue and the money thereof that's given to these various unions? Thank you, Chair.
Very good, very good.
I was a call, and next time down, tell the member my question. I can try, and we can explore how you
that. She paid me to cheat, Chair. Thanks, Chairperson. All of my appreciation for the presentation. I think it's a fairly positive one. One has a sense that can really say that we are turning a corner. In the bigger presentation, there's something on the National Teaching Award that we have not really touched now. I want to link that with SASCA, but also the leaks in court. Talking about the NTA, I'm very unhappy with the participation by schools. I know that with SASCA WFS, we need so many schools participating. I'm not sure if there is a target when it comes to NTA. My observation is that, if you look at in some areas, it's only that school that participates and others don't seem to have given up. What are we doing to make sure that it really becomes a map-based kind of participation? The National Teaching Awards. The second question, Chairperson, the number of subject advisors oriented towards CAPS. And I want to link this to what we have heard, what teachers are saying about the quality of orientation, their workshop. Just to hear from the DG and the officials, if they are happy, besides having achieved the numbers, are we okay with the quality of the training stroke orientation that takes place there. Number of schools having access to library is my third question. It may not be possible today, but I'm really interested, Chairperson, if we could hear villages and townships, how many of these schools are there? or maybe use the modern terminology and say in terms of quintiles. Because it may be that all these groups are quintile, you are quintile 5, and maybe to a certain extent quintile 4. Are we sure that these library services are going even to the most rural of our schools? The fourth one, I'm numbering them just so that whole school evaluation. WFE. WFE. 385. The target is 645, and the achievement is 385. That's too low. But I want to approach it from one angle at a percent. When look at Limpopo, zero. Eastern Cape, zero.
Yeah.
What is the metric pass? Eastern Cape is number 9. Limpopo is number 8. Yeah. Where is the logic? Shouldn't we be starting there? Shouldn't we be starting where there is the greatest need? I would have expected most of the schools to be in the Eastern Cape and Limpopo. Because that's where we know, well, I think everybody knows, I mean, these are the provinces that were under administration, but also in terms of performance, in metric results. But these are also rural provinces. These are also rural provinces. I have a sense that if the department wants to get the 75%, and for me, should be targeting 85%. Get Limpopo right, get the Eastern Cape right, and you are there. But this thing is not happening. By the way, Chairperson, we have heard of reports of officials who were kicked out of schools when they were coming to do this and this, to say, no, you didn't make an amendment. You know, something like that, in Limpopo province. I'm not sure whether it accounts for this deal. But also, what do we do to a teacher who kicks a departmental official out? Because for me, it's misconduct. We can't just go on as if nothing is happening. The last one, Honorable Ngobeni Maluleke has touched on it. I mean, clearly, if I fail to reach this target, so I'll reduce it so that I achieve it next year. Give me a target of 80%, I achieve it, and I say, oh, the target was too high. Let's make it 63. I don't know. It begs the question, what went into the initial where we did this target? I understood where the thing you are talking about, where we are dealing with absolute numbers, 149,000 and all those things, because then if you don't have a percentage, it becomes an issue. But really, I'm worried that we can actually have a situation where I say, if I don't let it reach the target, I'll have it reduced and call it irrational, whatever.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question refers to slide, and this is on the big presentation, slide 94, which is refers to the percentage of learners in schools that are funded at the minimum level. The DGIF no doubt will be aware that Limpopo particularly is having a problem at the moment, that some of their schools have been funded at the level of 40 rand per learner as opposed to 1,010 rand per learner that is set out in the norms and standards. The result is that many schools have had their electricity disconnected, they are unable to buy paper, etc. Now, it appears that directly linked to this is the delay in the midterm assessments for the grade 12s, which is now scheduled to start on the 7th, was supposed to start on the 3rd. But we are told by many school principals in Limpopo that the situation is absolutely chaotic. There is no money in schools, there is no paper, there is no electricity, and as I say now, we're told that the statute has actually stopped the exams until such time as funding is paid. But as I say, I'm sure the DG will be able to give us further information on that. So I request that. The next question here is on infrastructure. Libraries have been mentioned a number of times. I find it astounding that we cannot know the number of schools linked to a library. If district officers are in touch with their schools. They know how many schools have a library or access to library services. So I find it absolutely incredible that we actually don't know that. But nevertheless, there is a figure for 2011 of schools complying with a minimum standard of infrastructure, a basic norm for infrastructure, and there's a target for the basic norm for infrastructure, but there isn't actually a gazetted basic norm for infrastructure. So my question, although as I say there are many references to infrastructure here, but my question is, against what norm did you measure? The next question refers to slides 54, 58, and 59, which all refer to teacher provisioning. 54 is a comment, and I will put in written questions on it. I'm astounded, Chair, that we are using forms to profile our teachers, and that we've done 1,000 of our 26,000-odd teachers to find out what qualifications our teachers have, etc. But slide 58, I'm particularly concerned about. In the presentation that we received last week from Mutsem Wehli on teacher supply and demand, we were told that the estimated total termination of teachers is in the region of 3.5, attrition rate, the region of 3 to 4%. In 2011-12, we had a termination rate of 14,988 teachers that left the profession. Now, if we are getting, as per slide 58, 1,937 new young teachers coming in, as opposed to 14,988 going out, how do the two ever match up? Are we not ending up with a very quickly declining teacher population? Chair, please just note through you to Mr. Mwele that on page 59, we were told last week that 91% of Funtelashaka buses were placed last year. This slide says 84%. I don't know what the correct figure is, but that's just a comment. Slide 49 refers, Chairperson, to the to formal grade R. The percentage of children who've had access to formal grade R. Now, it's... I would like to share in the celebration of achievement. I'm just not so sure that the measurement is accurate. The measurement is done on the household survey. So it's just such a measurement. So how many children have been through grade R? To the best of my knowledge, however, there is no such thing as formal grade R, certainly not in the schools that we have visited. Some of them are praising sleep. Others are more formalized, but there's no such thing as a formal curriculum for a grade R teacher, but there isn't even such a thing as a grade R teacher. What is formal grade R? So these are people that have said my child attended grade R, but it's not formal grade R. I found that a little misleading, and perhaps the DG can explain why it isn't actually misleading. My last question, Chairperson, is with reference to the very last page of the not the thank you page, but the page 124, slide 124, it says, our interventions respond to the recommendations contained in the National Development Plan. My chairperson, one of the recommendations in the National Development Plan is a hands-off approach. And it's on page 284, I'm a school management for instructional leadership of the National Development Plan. But it's a hands-off approach for those schools that are functioning well. So the district officials do not have to be as involved with those schools who are functioning well. It says schools that are already performing well should not be expected to fulfill additional tasks that are designed to deliver improvement in poorly performing schools. This principle is accepted by the Department of Basic Education. We don't get any indication of that here in what has been put across with the district officials or the district officers. I realize this is a report on what had happened in the past, but it talks to interventions. I certainly hope, and I'd like to know, whether going forward, have we got in our district approaches a differentiated approach so that we do have a hands-off approach for the high-performing schools and a really, really hands-on approach, of course, for the poorly performing schools. Are we working towards this, and if so, how far are we in achieving that? Thank you, Chairperson.
I think, would you like to answer the question? Because I quite the number. And then I'll start with the Honourable Smile, Honourable Shana, and then the other two.
So are we stopping now?
Yes, because it's quite a number of questions, and I'm worried we are going to have problems. Is that in order? Wait. I make a ruling. Yes, DG?
Regarded by you, Honourable Chairperson.
How do you feel?
I'm fine either way, Honourable
Chairperson. Oh, to go on. But quite a number of the questions are interrelated, so you can come back. Thanks. Wait. We started again. Honourable Smiles.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, yeah. I have three questions.
Okay.
One is with regard to key developments in the sector, which I'd just like to know from the department on the expenditure on what upkeeps the magazine and what is the distribution of it. What's up teach? Yeah. Chairperson, this is it's not separate question, it's under key development.
Yeah.
I'm just phrasing it. Yeah. So it's part of my first question. And then also the expenditure on the other important key developments, the National Teaching Award and the Stop Rape campaign. Now my other question, the second question is with regard to Program 2, which is curriculum delivery. And the Chairperson, you will bear with me and even the department, I'll sort of assess the department whilst I was scoring. Where are the pluses, where are the minuses, and where are the questions? So in Program 2, you scored 16 passes, which means there have been indicators of increase. Then 3 minuses, which decreases, and then 5, where I don't make a judgment because either there's no target or what you've explained to me doesn't fit well. So, Chairperson, that indicates that the department, DBE, is doing well with the targets. Now, there were questions raised by my other colleagues about setting the target. I'm not going to deal with that. But what I want to ask you, and which you alluded to, SG, is to say we reached the targets and the quality must be moved to provinces. Now, yes, you can move it there. What are you doing? My question. You are a coordinating body. You are a monitoring body. And you, to a certain extent, you can give judgment and you must lead. So in that sense, I would like to ask you, what are you doing now that you know that, although you have achieved, but your provinces have not achieved, what are you doing about the quality of education, the learner performance that we all are worried about? Then the second question, Chairperson, is with Program 3, teachers. Learners and teachers always go together. Now you scored, out of the 6 targets, you scored 3 pluses and 3 question marks, which is 50-50. But the question that I have there is with regard to the teachers, especially, let me just get my documents now, Chair. Sorry. Program 3. The one on the number of qualified teachers and below.
Say, the slide number,
I don't know where that is, it's in page 69. The target is 6,800. The achievement is 8,227. There's a positive variance of 1,427. Chairperson, it looks good. But the real question is, what do we need? Against what are you giving this? If you say 147 is the improvement, the 1,400, but what is the real, what do we need? That is the question. So I cannot, that's why I made, for this one, I made a pass, yes, and a question. Because that is the critical one. If we don't know where we are going, this achievement will be fine. And then we might end up and say, next year what we need more teachers. And the case is that we do need more teachers, especially medicine science. And that they are under expenditure on medicine science. Thank you.
Thank you, Stepperson. Stepperson, on our money, when he left a message that I can use a quarter of his question. That's acceptable with you. Chairperson, after having...
We have to see improvement in relations between the IP and the ASC.
Chairperson, after having heard that, let me just first appreciate the presentation and proceed to my three questions with a general statement, which is this. We all agree that education is a societal issue.
Hold on. I think people have to keep quiet because everyone keeps quiet when you ask questions.
I got it.
And I would like to also just ask
you. Yes, yes. I was saying, Chair, I think, Chair, just to proceed my three questions with the general statement, which says that we all agree that education is a societal matter. As such, must use the language which is understood by everybody, government bodies, everybody there. But it's not the case, really. There are things which you could say in simpler words, but look for sense. Here is a poor government body member, integrated strategic framework for teacher education and development. That could be said in a simpler, for instance, sitting where I'm sitting, I don't really know what is this. Can we use, there are many other examples, but I've argued this in the past, there are many other examples where we use these high-filtered terms instead of ordinary, common words. Like in a health profession, for instance, a syringe is always a syringe. But in education, it's sort of to change most every day with the terms that we use. Now, Chair, my question, the first one is on the nutrition schools, what national schools nutrition program. That's the way we appreciate the target that has been raised.
Shana, I will never forget my maths teacher.
Yes.
He says when it comes to maths, everywhere, right through the world, it is the same terms used. But when it comes to English and Afrikaans, then we change just E's and R. So your education is a bit complicated, but I'll give you that one.
Okay, good.
You've been
yes, that's simpler. Now, we appreciate the target that we've reached. But my question is, does the department somewhere have national guidelines as when it comes to securing service providers and issuing of tenders? I'm saying this because in some provinces, in Kwazulu, for example, as you speak, some service providers have taken the department, the provincial department, to court over the issuing of tenders and other. Do you have national guidelines to that effect? Because that does put some spokes on the good work that you are otherwise doing in that field. And the second one, Chair, will be... I link it to what my colleague, though you see that far away from me today, Honorable Gina, where she says something like officials being chased away whenever they visit schools for assessment or whatever. Now, my question. Yes. Now, this assessment which we support. But what has happened, for instance, again in some provinces that I know the best, some assessment instruments have been introduced by the department to monitor latecoming, absenteeism, and the rest. But what has happened? Teachers have rejected that instrument. The reason? It has not gone through the chamber. My question to you, DJ, that every issue, like this assessment tool, has to go to the chamber, because this has been rejected now on that basis. What would be your support to provinces when they're faced with such issues? And the last one. You have the three categories of passes. One, admission to higher certificate studies, admission to diploma studies, admission to bachelor studies, again, could be put in similar words so that I understand. In each of these categories, admission to higher certificate, the improvement was 9,652. Admission to diploma studies was 3,237. Admission to bachelor studies, 1,204. You see, the higher you go, the numbers decrease. How do I put it as a question? You understand what I want to say, DJ? Yeah, because great minds think alike. I think DJ understands this, you know? Now, for each category, linked to what I wanted to ask, which you have clearly understood, for each category, what would be the passing percentage for each of these categories? And, yeah, that's my three questions. The fourth one? Okay, thank you, Chair. My fifth... Yeah, the last one, Chair, is on school libraries. Again, linked to some of my colleagues' questions. They've touched on the actual numbers of schools with or without libraries. We could appreciate it. But, Chair, we have these norms and standards for school infrastructure. Now, I read somewhere that these they were first published, but what is like these NGOs, I forget the actual name, have added their input into those, and they are being revised. These norms are now being revised. When are they due for publication? Thank you, Chairperson.
I have a few questions, unlike others. The first one is on... Actually, there were six, but you said that.
Yes.
Thank you. The first one is it's a remark that was said on 30 to 39%. That's how you have, it's like 30, but you exceeded the target.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm checking if you exceed the target that you're having, what are the implications on your budget? Because your targets inform, I think your targets are informed by the finances. And now if you somehow budget that you are going to do so much and you go beyond or above actually, can we conclude that something got a blow? Or you can do that and safely continue. I'm just saying, because it's like worrying me a little bit. And then second, on your subject advisors, the number of subjects, you are like saying that there are subject advisors on circuit, if I heard you correctly. But I should think, I know for a fact, that there are circuits that are having less subject advisors. But that to find that a subject advisor, instead of being confined to a particular circuit, he is for the whole region. And I was like checking if we can be assured here and now that now we are having subject advisors for all the learning areas in each and every circuit. Because it was not like this the last time I checked. And the last time is like this year, where I visited. And then the next one is, so you were talking of the age group of educators that are to retire. There are many, and it's a worrying fact. But I'm checking if that is linked to people who are training. Because if you know that, if we can learn to train according to need, you know that so many educators are needed. Perhaps we should not be sitting with a camp like this. Because you know that so many are to exit, except of course those who are called by higher authorities above. I mean, you cannot know about this. But the other people who will have to resign because of their age, we need to be prepared. And I don't want to say you. I'm trying to make you understand that it's us together. What is it that can be done to make sure that if so many get up, we are workshops that they are going to be placed? Are we linked to our training institution? The next one is to check if we are budgeting or moving towards budgeting for skills below your universities and universities. Because they are learners of people who do not go to FETs or universities in this country. Somehow they end at the, not by choice, some is like they have a fault. You know, our FETs and universities, we still have to talk to them. The amounts that are wanted there are exceeding what people are having in their pockets. So that not everybody who is there can be assured by the Department of Education that a child will leave school after getting matric, that's a skill. Are we moving towards it so that your matric certificate must be having a particular skill? Because until we get there, it's like we'll be seated with this child for a very long time. You don't have to go to a university or an FET to get the skill. If it could be somehow, the advice is that can we do it from the very beginning? And on the library issues, my understanding was that every school should be having a library, but we are not talking of a building. I didn't understand a school library as a building. Otherwise, every school will be having a big building called the library. The thing is, it can be just a conversion of a particular classroom or whatever. The question is, are we having libraries in our schools? Because if we follow that trend, it will be easy for all the schools to be having libraries. You don't, like, they don't have to, when you walk into the school building, and these days they've got arrows showing you where everything is. You see an arrow showing you where the library is. My understanding is that we should encourage, and are you doing it, that every school can, because you don't have to go and buy schools. All books, the books that are outdated, they need to be there so that learners read. We are sitting with a country which is having difficulties in reading. And improve that, I think, we need to deal with the libraries. And finally, your norm, it's not a fact. Yes. Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. Norms and standards.
Now six.
Serious.
Because everyone asked five. There was only
one
that asked four questions.
Yes, number five. I can't.
Now
I have
one, two, three, four, five questions. Block
on
the library.
Then it was work business of the library.
Supply and demand.
No. The chairperson is right. I withdraw it.
All right.
Only to thank them for this. Should have done it. Well, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
How many questions do you
have? I will have two questions.
So in this case,
two comments.
And speak on the technical, on it?
Yeah.
Well, because
technical. Yeah, I'm going to
Special school.
Let me start with college.
fight.
When I was a young man, or a young boy, actually, that was a young boy, not a young man, he was a boy.
Jefferson, I'm sorry to interrupt. The honourable member is not going to be on record, no?
Oh, are we being recorded here?
Yes. 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 Careful, be careful.
Just to illustrate
with all that
the importance of correcting wrong things instantaneously. When I was in grade 3, long ago, yes, we were actually forced to recite the railway stations from Messina to Pretoria, so that you don't get lost. During those times, we were using train. Starting Polokwane at 8 and then you arrive in Pretoria at 3 o'clock in the morning. So the whole night between Pretoria and then Polokwane. Now, I just want to illustrate something. Messina, Waterkoor, Maraloy, Strichatband, Uliakovsuk, Mirar, Monik, Lale, Solomon, Trisbeck, Arvastat, Centrila, Hansle, Potsdam, Sadda, Hans, Freight, Metrum, Wombat, Finn, and Triva, Hamaskral, Pretoria, and Pretoria. So I did it when I was in grade 3, but standard 3.
Yes.
And I still remember that.
That's
right. But if there is something wrong in that, it's a big problem. Because I don't forget it. Now, at one stage when we were dealing with the, I think it was a report on Karikude, I remarked about, I think it's page 3 of Karikude, I remarked about the spelling of Forge, remember? It's a long time ago, Forge. And I said, I think it needs to be corrected. We can leave it because the books are already distributed, but if we don't correct this thing, you know, these learners will always spell Forge the way it is spelled in Karikude. So this is just a remark. In other words, I want to remind people who deal with Karikude to check that Forge. Because we see it on receipts. You know, you find a graduate administrator in an office, you pay for the rent, and then he spells it the wrong way, and you say, my goodness, what's happening here? Anyway, let's leave it. But I think the message has landed. Now, it's about Karikudi's remark. Now, the second remark is to deeply remark, let me change it into a question. To save you, all the problems. My house is opposite a sort of FET college. They call them now multi-purpose centers. But now, in the old Dal, we used to call them Ambach School, vocational training schools. That's where I taught for about 10 years. Okay. Now, we're giving practical, real practical. Wherever I go when I meet a person that I trained as a carpenter, I'm telling you, I qualify for a coke that you buy, for 50 rand. Just give you 50 rand and say, when buy coke, and I say, oh my goodness, it will be a very big bottle. Anyway, I take it because they are grateful. About the practicals that they got during the time.
Thank you.
So the reason why you say technical, I'm coming back again to the technical thing. My house is opposite an FET college. When I went home over a weekend, there was a serious hot strike there. Not only serious, but it's hot. Because kids were running around, they overturned two government vehicles in that school because of practicals. They want practicals. But remember, this is not for us here, it's for higher education. But I'm just illustrating how this thing can be as serious. Now, I'm an MP, and in the show, we have a number of people who are government officials. Now they just simply lump us together. These are the garden people. They don't care. Now, my house is there. I can't remove it because there is a strike. I just have to pray because the heat comes into my room when they sing there. They want particulars. And I think last time in our meeting I talked to my friend there about it. Yeah, I talked about this strike. At the center of the strike is practicals. Even teachers, when they meet you, especially me because I taught there, they didn't say, hang out, but what are you doing there in Cape Town? I say, no, we're making laws. Last year, laws that say our children must not get practical. I say, no, we are not moving in that direction. It's something that we are fixing. So the question is, when we were attending the workshop there, I'm sorry, I mustn't be too particular, but the intention is not to be particular, really. It's just to clarify us. Mr. Padayashi, if you say a string of missed calls on your phone, please pardon me, it was because I thought maybe I will get you and talk to you, but unfortunately you are in meetings and so on. The big question I was trying to pursue is about the practicals in Seshego High School. How far is this thing? Because I know Seshego High School is not far from the very one I'm talking about. The message can reach Seshego High School. We don't want to wait until they overtear the ankles there. At least if a word goes there, to show them you are on track. You can't build those workshops in one day. But at least if they know you are on track, I think something we should have achieved something. Maybe a truck can offload some bricks there, even if once after a month and so on. But as long as they see the bricks, they know these bricks are for our workshop. So I need just a small comment on that. Remember the other time you did give us some little feedback after we talked about this. So I don't want to... I think this is sufficient.
No, that's true.
Well, I'll let them be okay.
Yes. Yes. Bye, donkey. Ekvar, dear, you promise.
Oh, the
mic was on.
All of them.
No, I didn't put it on, so.
I would like the department to answer these questions. Oh, yes, I forgot. There's just, just you want the time, please? Yeah. The two from you, quickly.
Yeah. Chairperson?
But I don't like it long.
No. It's very short. Very short, Chairperson. Special education, yes. Chairperson, it's with regard to, once again, to related to Program 2 and Program 3. Teachers first. You will remember I've asked a question about what is the need for teachers. So it relates to special, the teachers for special needs in education. What is the need there and what is the current situation? Chairperson, and then with regard to Program 2. The curriculum. Chairperson, yes. We appreciate what is being done for Braille to a certain extent. But it's not Braille only, which is a learning barrier. But there's a serious shortage of doing, resources and assistive devices for the other learning barriers. Can you give us an indication on what you are doing there, and especially in the provinces, how do you motivate them to do their part? Thank you.
Mr. O'Brien, it's quite a number of questions that they are interlinked, and I'll just listen to your case and just as we go along. I would like you to answer because there were questions that were repeated. And by further members, and just add it on. And I'll leave Mr. Padayashi for last when it comes to the technical school. Thank you. You may answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will answer the questions, the general ones. I'll refer to various officials to answer questions in their respective branches and functions. I will answer the questions in order they've been asked, except I'll start with Ms. Dumpenshane's question and apologize for using the word rhinitis. I apologize for my runny nose.
Rhino,
like a runner. Rhino is nose.
So,
thank you. Honourable Member Maleke asked a question about Funza Mshaka. If we exceed, what happens with, where does the extra money come from and so forth? In some cases, some targets are very much linked to the unit cost that's attached to it. In other cases, it's not so much linked to a unit cost. In cases like training, in finance and economics, and again, I'm now going to do the opposite of what I started doing, by simplifying language, is that you have what's called a fixed unit cost, and you have what's called a variable marginal cost. For example, if I'm training 10 teachers, and if they bring one teacher in, it's not going to cost me the unit costs in addition, because I don't have to pay for another teacher, etc. Very often you only have to pay for food if it's a buffet. So at least you have to pay for another meal. The rent, etc., won't increase. So that's different from fixed cost. But the only member is right, when it comes to Funza Mshaka, it's a fixed cost, because you say X amount for a bursary. But how the bursaries work in planning as opposed to what actually happens is that the money transferred to NSS, NSS then makes allocations to higher education institutions, and it depends on the uptake. So generally what happens is you allocate amount of money to NSS, and you hope and you predict and you motivate people to take it up in the areas of shortage subjects. They may not take up all of that. So that's why we put our target in this particular case. What happens to the extra money? That money is rolled over for 30 years so that it can be used to roll out to additional programs. So that's as far as fixed costs are concerned. Now, you are not answering it simply like that, because in other instances, if you over-deliver or under-deliver, it doesn't make a big difference to the budget and the expenditure itself. In this case, it does. Okay, so I hope that clarifies that issue. In terms of infrastructure, the target was 92%. I think all of the members are right, that you can't have targets that simply, if you don't achieve it, you revise it downwards. And if you overachieve it, you revise it upwards. The point I've got to ask is, why is the target realistic? What was it based on? In this instance, I just think, just rationally, if you look at our knowledge of infrastructure now, to have assumed that by 2012-13, you'll eliminate backlogs so that you have 92% of the schools being at the point of basic provision, was really overly optimistic. And one of the reasons for that was it was based on a database, National Education Infrastructure Measurement Information System, the new system, which was populated by provinces. So that database itself was extremely unreliable. And based on that, and based on our understanding of that time, that if you got money, the contractors would just come to the party. A combination of those two things made us set the target like this. So the money was made available by government. But the reality now is that, A, the data wasn't reliable, but B, even if government got the money, it doesn't mean that the capacity in the private sector, the state, raw materials and so forth, allows you to deliver it in that space of time. So really speaking, in this instance, it's not simply that the department say, no, we never achieve the target, let's revise it up. It's based on engagements with the PICC, Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. All of them are coming together to say, as a whole of government, our targets are too realistic. So what DBE is saying is, let's simply revise the target down. The question we must ask is, what's realistic? And we've learned, for example, in the Eastern Cape, we thought we can build 50 schools in a certain period of time. There's an other data, which is the NIMS data, as I indicated. But the data didn't tell us that some of these areas don't have roofs at all. So we appointed the contractor. The contractor couldn't get to the site, which meant it was late now for another department to build a road. We need to wait for electricity lines to be laid. So those are things that we didn't know in our data. So again, all those things coming together causes us to say that indicator is far too high. So I'm saying, let's look at it on a case-by-case basis. The principle that I agree with entirely is that you can't simply determine an indicator at whim, and then you can't simply revise it downwards at whim as well. It depends on the motivation. In this case, I'm making the case that there is a compelling motivation to revise it downward. It's not just the DBE. Let me just also add this point. that it's not within the freedom of the DE simply to regard an indicator up and out. A lot of these key indicators are held by government as a whole. In other words, performance management and evaluation drive these things, the delivery agreement, the president, the PICC, there are a number of government institutions that come together in defining these indicators. For example, when a performance of 60%, it's not the DBE indicator, it's a stretch indicator set by the presidency. So the DBE can't simply take an indicator and revise it up and down without it going through government's planning processes. So I just want to emphasize that point. Just to make the case that these indicators we do hold as important, and the credibility of these indicators are held in high regard. And the presidency, primarily through DPME, is actively involved in ensuring that these indicators are kept. These reports that we present now to honorable members, we present shortly to the cabinet. So the cabinet monitors these indicators as well. So any alteration of the indicator is something that will feature in the cabinet as well of the country. So again, I just want to make a point that these indicators aren't something that we treat lightly. It's something that has to go through a very rigorous process. Training of teachers, then now again, that's very different to Kunza Lushaka, as I've mentioned. With the training of teachers, you can use the same budget, and if you go to a certain area where there are few teachers in accounting, and you pull them, you use X amount of money to train 10 teachers. You can use the same amount of money to train 30 English teachers, for example. As I've indicated, there's a difference in teacher training between unit costs and marginal costs compared to bursary schemes, where marginal cost and unit cost always stay the same. It doesn't change because it costs you, it's an award to a student. You give the full amount of money to a student. Whereas if you train teachers, they come, you still employ the same tutor to train 10 or 20 or 30 teachers. So I hope that point has been clarified. That's a very, very important question the Honourable Member raised. In theory, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that money is supposed to go back into the school fund, and that money must be used then to buy new books or do whatever with that money. What the schools do with it is to be monitored by the provinces as well. So in terms of the policies, that money ought to have been used like the funding norms money, and the part of the funding norms money is supposed to be used for LTSM, etc. So if the school collects money for a lost book, and let's say a province supplies 100% books, so they don't need to use that money for books, they need to use it for something else at school. So that's what the policy is case. Honorable Gia, in terms of Kunza Lushaka, a warning late after July, I mean, that's part of the problems that has affected efficacy in some universities and in the allocations of NSFAS. Here we work with NSFAS and we work with universities, so there's multiple partners to ensure that this thing happens in time. This is a real problem that the Honourable Member is raising, which we address constantly. And in fact, where we started and where we are now, things are getting better in terms of Kunza Lushaka. This week, 50% of schools get support. When will schools be given support? And, you know, the Honourable Member makes the point about extra classes. Now, let me tell you that it's clear, and that is why when I spoke about this phase of intervention, that our focus is on districts, our focus is on circuits, our focus is indeed, as one honorable member raised, to say, where schools are functioning, don't give them the same kind of intensive support that you need to give to a school that's not functioning. So that's clear. Let them ensure that districts are capacitated. We're doing a lot of work on that. Although we say, we recognize, it doesn't mean you have a buddy in that post, that you've got an effective person in that post. So we're looking at competency frameworks, we're looking at what does it take to be appointed as a curriculum advisor, as a district official, as a circuit official, we're looking at performance management, but key is the appointment of these people. And I must say that the large majority of cases where we have problems with the effectiveness of district or circuit managers and principals, it can go back to the way they appointed. If you don't appoint the right person according to the competency framework, if you don't have proper performance management, you can have people who are not performing. And that is our strategy at this point in time. Honourable Member raised the issue about is it sustainable extra classes? You know, during the week, weekend, holidays, I say no, not. And we've been focusing on this a lot. The Minister's been talking about this every time she speaks on the matter. And indeed, the reason we got into this is to say we need to fix the system up systematically. Focusing on foundation, working ourselves through. But what do we do about learners who are in the system? What do we do about teachers who are in the system? And that's part of our strategy. But still, we need to balance it. Let's be honest here. You say to that person, we're not here to defend. This is not a PR exercise. We have to present the challenges that we've got in the system. And one of the big challenges here is that the more you have extra classes, the more teachers are reluctant to teach in the period they're supposed to teach. For one, they're probably tired. But for two, they're thinking, oh, I can do it on Saturday. I'm coming on Saturday. I'll do it on Saturday. And now, if you talk in terms of other areas of go slow, then people's understanding of what they're supposed to do in 7 hours is based on that attitude of, oh, I'll teach it on Saturday. So what we see Senzo was saying in KZN is, okay, you said 7 hours, but I want you to work for 7 hours. You work for 7 hours. It's that I agree that we can't run a system on extra classes. In fact, the reality we have now is that the normal curriculum delivery is happening in extra classes. That's not what extra classes ever were intended for. It's for enrichment. It's for promoting things. The challenge we have, though, is that you're doing it in the main, or large, let me put it this way. In instances where you're doing it with the same teachers, you've got this challenge that you've got to address. So it's a matter we are aware of. It's a matter we're addressing. And we're saying, how can we support teachers to ensure that the key things are happening? The one major intervention, Honorable Chair, is curriculum coverage in the time that teachers are teaching. So to ensure that at least cover the curriculum. Secondly, how do we support teachers who have weaknesses in regard to teaching or delivering certain parts of the curriculum? We can talk a lot about it, Honorable Chair. I'm trying to be brief, but I think I'm just saying that these are key issues. Absolute visit percentages, Honorable Member, this matter may not have been clear in the way I explained it. Let me just say that if I argument, I'm not looking at the figure now. We're saying we want 100,000 people to pass a senior certificate, right? With access to study for a bachelor's degree at university, 100,000. And then for the next year, we want it to be 110,000. That assumes one of two things, that either the number of candidates in grade 12 is the same or it increases. In our instances, the number of candidates goes down, not because of dropout only. Dropout, rate of dropout stays the same. It's because the number of learners in the system have shrunk, right? For two reasons. One is lower birth rates, and second, because of the age of admission 12 years before. Now, because of that, the absolute number, which is the number that's not a percentage, has actually shrunk. And therefore, for you to set the target of 110,000, you are not only setting a higher number, you're setting a much higher percentage. So what's happened in our case, the percentage passes increased, but the absolute number was below target. So it looks like it's underperformance. One way you look at it, it is. But in fact, there was performance exceeded the target from a percentage point of view. Now, again, I'm saying that target was set on the assumption that the learner population will either stay the same or grow. That is why it's being revised. Not being revised purely because we didn't achieve it. Again, here, Honorable Chair, to revise this indicator, we were approached by the presidency, we're talking to them about it, and it's in conjunction with them that this thing is revised. And it goes to cabinet. So not just the DVE deciding that we want to revise. But we will constantly present both figures, because we want to ensure that we monitor absolute numbers in relation to what number entered grade 1 12 years before that. So I don't know if that was clearer at this point in time. E-learning, library services, I'm going to leave to Mr. Melly. And then teacher union collaboration, how do you monitor, this is Honorable Gina as well. You know, here, the Honorable Member is absolutely right. This was a very innovative, very important, not what is, partnership. And in the case of union, it's a new thing. In the case of certain regions, it's even newer. So again, not to defend, this thing varies. It's very variable across the system, quality of this delivery. Now, that doesn't mean you throw it out, because this is a key way to professionalize unionism. We work very strongly with unions. We want to see materials, we want to approve it. We set the competency frameworks for the training, we set the parameters for that training, and we send out monitors in terms of the provincial officials who monitor it. We want documentary confirmation that the training took place. We want other people to quality issue it as well. So we do monitor it very strongly. But let me say this. We want to, and we do bend over backwards to support it, because we believe that where it's working is working very well. In other parts of the world where it's working extremely well, the benefits are great. In this country, the potential for it to work is excellent.
and we want to really ensure that this thing succeeds. So that's teaching and collaboration. In terms of Honorable Decor's questions now, MTA, Saski, and the League's participation of schools, I'll hand it over to Mr. De Bene to answer those things. But as far as the MTA is concerned, Honorable Member right, at this point in time, we put it out asking schools to nominate. Now, again, there, if a school is not into that culture of participating, they won't. Now, I think the Honorable Member is saying we need to be much more purposeful in bringing the schools in to participate. And certainly, we are doing that, and we'll do that more aggressively. Regarding Saski and League's Dirigent De Bella will answer that. Sarigo guys oriented to caps. Oh, Mr. There needs to be a slip of the tongue there. I'm going to refer that to Mr. Melly. Number of schools with access to library, the details, the quintile, Mr. Muni will look at that one, and Mr. Pariachi if necessary. WSE, in terms of the target and Limpopo and Eastern Cape. Again, I'll remember, the first of what Andre Dikobo is raising is absolutely right. If we want to have an impact on the system throughout, and we impact on Limpopo and Eastern Cape, who clearly is performing way below their potential, it's going to make a big difference. If you look at Eastern Cape in Anna, they're performing very high. But look at NSC, they're performing very low. Limpopo is the opposite. Anna very low, NSC very high. So clearly they're focusing on certain things. And they are the lowest and second lowest. So I agree with the Honourable Member. And there, in those provinces, there's been a period, a long period, where schools have not received the attention they ought to. And now with Section 100, we're doing that. But again, you know, with Section 100, you only put in a handful of officials into a department. The department still runs with its staff. You can't establish a federal department. But again, we're already beginning to see improvements in Eastern Cape, quite significant, in the Limpopo, but with a lot of additional problems that the Honorable Lovemore raised, which I'll come to in a moment. But I agree with the Honorable Member that if we focus on doing proper WSE in Eastern Cape and Limpopo, it's going to make a difference. And just to touch on the point of teachers feeling it's their right to refuse officials access to the school. Firstly, it's illegal to the moment. You can't refuse somebody the right. And again, it depends now on how assertive we're going to be. In some provinces, it becomes very assertive to say it's a responsibility of government to do that, and you will subject yourself to it. The question is, do you need to go to the ELRC? No, you don't. Issue about teacher attendance, teacher accountability, and so forth, already there as policy. You, as a policy, need to monitor teacher attendance. You need to monitor the functionality of a school. So you don't need to take every instrument that you develop in order to carry out this policy into LRC. We monitor the opening of schools, for example, at the beginning of the year. We develop an instrument, we update it every year. You don't go and negotiate that instrument at all. You negotiate anything that impacts on conditions of service. So clearly, yeah, it's about ensuring that government becomes much more assertive when it comes to monitoring schools. And the issue about officials not being allowed to school, the problem we have in the country is that it's very often confronted in underperforming schools. In performing schools, not a problem. But again, those are the schools you don't need to go into. The point that another one will remember, right? So this is one of the big challenges in 2013 going forward that we've really got to deal with. And it's arisen because over the last 3 or 4 years, government has become much more assertive about going into schools. And that's probably why I'm seeing this reaction emerging. I've answered the question about you fail to reach a target, you reduce it. By stressing that it's not simply just reducing the target. There's quite a process involved in ensuring the targets are changed. Honorable Lovemore, percentage of limits funded at the minimum level, Limpopo, yes indeed. Let me speak to the Limpopo issue. Because of the funding problems in Limpopo that gave rise to Section 101B, the transfer to schools in terms of the national norms and standards for school funding were not effected in the year that we intervened. That's 2011-12, and then parts of 2013. They weren't effective because of funding problems. Now, in the current financial year, the provincial education department managed to get a significant increase in funding for national norms and standards for school funding. I think the figure now stands on 1.2 billion rand. Part of this might be used for textbook procurement, as in all provinces, and part for non-textbook, non-personnel, non-CAPEX allocations that's made to school for their use. Now, we were there week before last in Limpopo as part of our monitoring visit. And the provincial education department is ready to transfer that amount to schools. The shortfall in terms of what is actually normed, and this is not a hard norm, right? It's a guideline across provinces. It depends on provincial pressures and so forth. But the differential is slight in this instance with 1.2 billion rand that's available. And the provincial education department was ready to make the allocation. However, the provincial treasury has introduced a new system in terms of their financial management system, BAS. And because of that problem, the transfers couldn't be effected. They've been working on the weekend, working with CETA, SITA, State Information Technology Agency, to make those payments. So in short, the money's in the provincial education department. The allocations have been made on paper. It's ready just to do the run. The problem has been the system, the financial, the best system that allows you to effect those payments. When I spoke to them on Sunday, they were taking steps and they were getting permission. They sent people even to Pretoria to process those payments. And I think by now they probably made some progress. But that is the problem that has happened as far as the funding office is concerned. It was extremely bad because of budget pressures. It's getting progressively better. Now, really speaking, it's significantly improved. It's only marginally below what the optimum required level is, but the problem has been in terms of actually effecting the payment, which is part of the system problem, as opposed to the Department of Education's problem in province. But the honourable member raised an important point. She used the term chaotic. Now, in province, because it's a complex system, if one thing falls out of kilter, it affects a whole lot of other things. And that's what causes the chaos we're talking about. Now, here, you've got the money is ready to run. If it's not transferred to schools, schools actually suffer because this money is supposed to be used for basic inputs. And that is why we were so strong. That's why we made a trip to deal with funding norms and a whole range of other things. So it does lead to a chain of events which causes problems, which results in a situation like this. Infrastructure, libraries mentioned, number of schools, how do we not know the number of schools linked to a library? Again, here, it's a very important point the honourable member's raising. And in fact, this is what caused us to believe that when we ask provinces and schools for data, that we can believe their data. And that new system I spoke about is based on what schools told us. But to realize that you can't rely on them. We can't rely on the six. It's bad, and we deal with it, and I spoke about how we're dealing with it. Competency assessments, accountability, making sure the right people are appointed. When it comes to infrastructure data, when it comes to how many learners need books, when it comes to shortages, we get very low accountability by district circuit officials. We get them supplying incorrect, incomplete information without any fear of consequences. We get them not being lied when we find out them that the information either wasn't submitted or wrong. So this is a matter we're dealing with here. But the reality is that the data they've provided us with is very unreliable. So we ask them, how many schools have libraries? What we get back is something we really can't rely on. That is why increasingly the mechanism for data collection now, because it impacts on so many things, is something that we're doing in a manner that improves credibility. So I agree with you, honourable member, it is a odd situation to be in, but the reality is yes, we don't get the accurate information. Forms to profile teachers, supply, demand, attrition, and so forth. Let me just raise with the honourable member that she was speaking about 1,200 appointed. That's 1,200, getting
the sense? That's the quarter. I apologize. That's the quarter.
Okay. That's Funza. Okay. So that question.
No, sorry, Chair. I did make it clear that was the quarterly appointment.
Yes.
But the annual appointment was in the region of 6,000 odd.
8,000.
Where the attrition is in the region of 15,000 odd. So there's still a major shortfall. Thank you, Chair.
On the chair. I don't think Mr. Mwell has got the information to answer that. I think maybe to give accurate figures on the chair, we'll respond to the written question. But let me just raise now that in our slides we've indicated that 8,227 teachers joined the profession, but under 30s. That to me means the bulk of the new entrants. But we even have over 30s coming in and out. Right? So there's quite a few coming in. But the basic point the Honourable Member is making is, are we balancing attrition with intake? And that's the big issue. Now, these teachers, and another member asked that, okay, we're appointing these people, but are they the right people? Now, let me make this point first about the second question. If they are appointed, that means they're the right people. Remember we said 8,227 entered the profession. We didn't say there's a supply of teachers. There are some who are supplied, but are not employed. Right? So if they're employed, they are the right ones, because they're employed according to a vacancy. However, are we filling all those that we need teachers for? The answer is no. We're not. Is it because we don't have enough supply? The answer is not necessarily. Now let me explain why it becomes complicated. In provinces, they have high excess educators, like Eastern Cape currently has, like Limpopo has. They have a phenomenon where they have vacancies, they have teachers who are looking for jobs who they can't apply because they have teachers who are double-parked who may not be the right teachers for the job. You see the complexity of this whole thing. That's why I'm saying, one of the choices is quite a complex thing, which we'll answer. And my view on this thing, and we do work on supply and demand, it's not so much the issue of supply overall. It's supply of math science teachers that's an issue. The big problem is excellent educators that we must manage. And the big problem is the bulge that's currently sitting on the 40 to 49-year-old that we're talking about. Now, how do we plan to deal with that bulge? Because if you sit back, in about 5 to 10 years, that bulge is going to hit you hard. It will hit you for about 10 years very hard. What do we do about it? At the moment, we're doing a lot of work with provinces. We want to introduce a system where we ask teachers, especially those who are not in shortage subjects, to continue to consider early retirement. Right? And we give them early retirement at early age, so that we begin to create vacancies across the age gradient. And then we start putting people into those vacancies so that we can have a better spread. So we take people in now for the next 10 years every year. But if you wait for that bus to leave and you bring in teachers to substitute them, assuming you have them, you create a new bus. Don't follow what I'm saying. We'll eliminate the 50 to 60 bus and we'll replace it with the 20 to 30 bus. And that bus will work through the system. That's something you don't do. I was responsible for education planning before in Branch P. And one thing you read constantly in the books and whatever you taught is that that is something you must avoid, that bulge. You've got to work hard to avoid that bulge. And the reason we had it was when we consolidated departments, it's a 94-96 issue. We're still dealing with that issue now. But we want to get rid of that bulge in the system. We want to be much more even. So that is why we employ this strategy, Honourable Chair. So again, it's a complex issue. I will not answer in writing, but we must constantly come back to the committee to indicate how we're managing this thing. And I'm talking now about our strategy. We need compliance by provinces. We need compliance by unions. We need a whole lot of things for this to happen. We need to make sure that if we make it available, and I want to repeat this point for emphasis, if we make this mechanism available, then provinces don't let the wrong teachers go. It happened before. Right? If we say you can allow teachers to go early, and then they let the male teachers go, we're in trouble. That's why you can't jump on a strategy like this, on the members. It will be a problem. I'll probably be in retirement by then, but the system will suffer with another bulge of wrong teachers. You can't allow that if we are responsible planners. So again, I'm repeating that this must be done very, very carefully. It's a very complex exercise. We have to sit with provinces to make sure that we can check which teachers are being allowed to go. And in a system of about 400,000 individuals, it's not easy to keep check on these things, but we'll have to keep check on. So I'm sorry for focusing on that quite a bit, but I think it's a very important issue that we need to manage.
Chair, is it possible just to clarify something that the DG said in his response?
You can just ask us clarification, but I wouldn't like this coming in, because the thing is that I've got a conclusion that I would like to make on this. Because next week we are having a meeting with Higher Education on Teachers Development. Because I thought once the DG rounded off, there are certain things I'd like to speak to. Just ask for clarification, we just hear what it is.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I just didn't understand when the DG was speaking about getting rid of the bulge to the 40 to 49 bulge to early retirement, possible early retirement, how he would even out the age profile, because there aren't enough new teachers coming into the system. Where are the new teachers going to come from, the younger teachers? Thank you, Chair.
Now, can I just respond quickly? The figures we've given is teachers who enter the system, not supply teachers. I made the point that it's possible, and indeed we find it in provinces, that there are more teachers available to teach than those who are actually employed. And the reason for that is that provinces are trying to manage their salary well. They're sitting with teachers in excess who are consuming the money. So even though they're carrying vacancies, they're not absorbing the full amount of teachers. So we can then, through absorbing those, and accelerating the training, employ further teachers. But again, it's a complex issue. It's got to do with numbers. And what I'm saying here, not employing numbers, because you must employ the right teachers each year. So that's why I'm saying, let's come back with this thing. These things need to be worked through very carefully. If you don't work it through, you are going to have problems, because one of the key issues in our system currently that's compromising quality, in addition to the issues we're raising, it's about the fact that we've got teachers teaching a classroom whereby they're not the best qualified to teach that classroom. And I'm not talking about grade 12 here. When you assume that to teach foundation phase, okay, you taught grade 6 before, you can teach foundation phase. Never. Foundation phase is highly specialized. Mm-hmm. So we've got that problem in the system. So I'm talking about bringing all these issues together. This is the key thing that we really need to focus our attention on very carefully. And I must say, it's an area where we didn't have the energy to focus enough on, because we were dealing with PPN, excess educators, teachers moving, and because you've got to move a teacher, you simply match them probably to a post. And that's where you have problems in the system. Okay, thank you. In terms of grade R, whether it's formal, Mr. Mwari will pick up on that one. Schools performing well, I've answered that question, that our approach is indeed a differentiated approach. And because I made the point that we're using evidence on performance and functionality, and we're targeting based on that, we will therefore target those schools that are underperforming and have a different approach for schools that are performing. Honorable Smug, then, Kivyama Sector, WhatsApp teach expenditure, the expenditure and distribution. We don't have these figures here now. We didn't come prepared for that one, Honorable Chair, but can we take that one as one that we'll develop a written response for, including the others? And then curriculum delivery, reach the target, but what about quality? Are we happy with that? Mr. Mwene will answer that one. Teachers, number of qualified teachers achieved in terms of what we need. Again, I've spoken about this whole range of issues on supply and demand. And I think we'll take that question of Honorable Smart as well into that basket of questions which we'll respond to. Honorable Ponshane, feeding scheme, I have addressed myself to the simpler language issue. In terms of national guidelines for securing service providers, Mr. Ndebele will respond to that. Monitoring instruments, I've spoken about that one, teacher resistance. The three categories and the requirements there, Mr. Padiyaji will speak to that one in terms of bachelor's, diploma, and I certificate. School library norms and standards, Mr. Fadiachi will speak to that one. Honorable Mushwana, if we exceed implications of the budget, I've tried to answer that question. Subject advisors, some circuits have less. That is true. We're still sitting with that problem. And here in provinces that have the largest proportion of underperforming schools have a greater problem in terms of numbers. And this is part, this one of the reasons why our approach now in terms of improving performance in the system is a district-based approach. Getting the capacity of districts right, getting their capacity to support schools right, getting school provisioning right, and getting school leadership and teaching right. So it's part of those issues, but definitely the honourable member is absolutely right. Age group retired, links to training, balancing supply and demand, I've spoken to those issues. Budgeting, skip below FETs. Mr. Mwari will speak to that one in terms of the preparation through the schooling system of learners so that they have some technical skill that they emerge with. And libraries, each school should have that. Are we there?
Mr. Mali will speak to that one, but essentially the figure we've given is based on a very low baseline. And all remember is right, we're not talking of a physical room, we're talking of making available library and information services in order to create a text-rich environment through a number of mechanisms. That's what we're doing. And we're focusing indeed, as honourable member has implied, on poor schools in rural areas where provision has traditionally been low. And we're looking at innovative ways to make sure that books are available. Part of our literacy and numeracy strategy and our reading strategy is that in a foundation phase, each class should have, let's say, 30 readers for a class of about 30 learners, really. Right? Something in that region.
Yes.
That's 30 different readers, different titles. So not 30 copies of the same book. So a learner can have access to 30 stories there as well. So that's what we're doing. Honorable Tata Khanyako, in terms of Kari Gude, Mr. Mali will address himself to that one, I'm sure, and go back and fix it up, and technical education as well. Honorable South, in terms of special needs, Mr. Mali will address that as well. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thanks a lot. And DG, I just thought you made a note of, because I'd like to speak now, because there's still a lot to be done, on the questions that you're going to answer in writing. And I think, too, we'll have to have another go, you know, like last week we did supply and demand, that, you know, like you said, another report back on this bulge that we have, because we are looking at quality. But I think there's a problem that I'm having, and I think every member of you are honest, and you did answer us that when it comes to, you know, your targets and reducing targets, to me, you know, like you did say that the data that you receive is not reliable, and to me it affects your baseline, you know, when this is not quite your baseline figures, which means when it comes to our provinces, there are problems in each province when it comes to their baseline figures. We do not have a proper baseline. Now, I want to speak to it because I think it's important just to mention it, but we have to see, you know, what will the department do, you know, to see that their figures are more reliable. Because to me, it's no use going through cabinet data. I mean, everyone says something, but you're supposed to have reliable data. There are other issues that I speak to that you mentioned as we went along at the end of this meeting. But I thought that you just mentioned the two, yeah. Thank you. Who are you going to give over to now?
Over now.
Because it is correct. That is with your plan, information, and assessment at budget. That is underspent because just over a billion. But what worries me, because it's an incorrect baseline that you have, is that 90 million that you underspent with that comes from other different programs. And I think you try to speak with. Because a person becomes worried when it comes to this, because 90 million, that's a lot too. Because people on the ground will ask you if that was the underspending within education. They could have used, you know, they don't understand perhaps the vacancies or this or that or that. They'll rather say, then why didn't you build another school? Or do something else within education itself. Thank you. Ms. Mawele?
Thank you, DJ. Thank you, Chair. I will just pick on those questions that the DG directed that I should pick on. The first one is around e-education. The question which was posed by Honorable Gina. The sector has been focusing on four areas in terms of e-education. The first one is e-content development. The interactive workbooks that the DG referred to in the presentation is a product of that. We are making some progress in that respect. The second area is ICT rollout in terms of hardware in other words, the provision of computers, laptops, etc., and etc. We have not made much progress there. And then the third area is around connectivity. In terms of connectivity, provinces are moving. Some are close to 100% connectivity, some are still lagging behind. I'm very reluctant to say, but if in your ruling you find it, fine that we provide a report in this respect, we can do that.
Yes, I got it down there, integration at the report.
Yeah. We can do that, but the reason why I'm reluctant is because I've been coming to Cape Town every week. I don't want to come again to present, unless if we send somebody to come and present, but that being the case.
We'll decide whether you come every week. And you didn't come every week, for it was certain times that you were not here. And I would like Tata Khanyako and the Honourable Mushwara just to lower your voice, because I have to concentrate on what is being said. Thank you. Now I won't add that he is the favorite, because I am looking at colors to see whether they match, but they won't say anything. And if they are as match.
Okay, content
development. The stripes. The stripes match with the stripes. Thank you, continue.
The content development, it's infrastructure rollout. And then the third area is connectivity. I said provinces are at different levels of success. And then the last area, which I think is a favorite area for Honorable Kina, is teacher professional development. We've made tremendous progress there. The difficulty is the application of skills that have been acquired from training. In other words, we've trained many teachers on ICT, but the survey that we've made is that many of these teachers some of them don't even have these badges to use in order to make sure that the skills that they acquired are applied. So those are the four areas. We are reviewing the implementation plan. Probably when we come around, we will have a much more comprehensive plan. We should probably have eight areas as compared to the four that I have shared with you. And then in terms of access to school library and information services, I agree we need to do more. DG indicated that the figure that we have, which is quite conservative, it's 51%. It comes from the survey which was conducted in 2011. And that survey did not include the definition which was given by Honorable Mushwana. And she's right. The traditional way of calling a library four walls filled with books, the world has moved away from that. There are many varied modalities of providing library and information services. One of them is mobile library services. We've introduced it in this country. The other common one is a classroom library, corner libraries, which is highly recommended worldwide for your primary schools. That because part of learning activities in the primary school classes involves a lot of reading, it's better that you manage library activities within a class as compared to a building which is aloof from where the learners are carrying out those activities. So in our plan, I shouldn't be saying this, we've developed a plan and a strategy costed at roughly about 700 million. And DG instructed that we finalize it so that we give it to him to go and put a bid, which has not been done as yet, to Treasury. And we are saying to bring our system up to speed, whether you talk about corner libraries, mobile libraries, your traditional library in terms of four walls and books inside for secondary schools or high schools, we need that amount of 700 million, which could be broken down to 3 years or 5 years. So it's a project that we are handling at the moment.
Can I just ask a question? Why don't you have like a classroom library for high school? Because you say that, you know, corner. Would you say worldwide, but okay, for primary school? Why should it be the four walls, high
school? Well, then it means, Chairperson, my immediate take on it is that it might escalate the cost. Of course, your primary schools are in the majority. Probably 70 to 80% of our system are primary schools. But it's because of the nature of activities of your primary school classes and grades in terms of engaging with reading and writing. Then the next one is about the subject advisors, quality of the orientation. Again, yeah, the anecdotal evidence that you are getting is that this orientation is good. We get it from the teachers, we get it from subject advisors. I shared some experience that I had with engaging with particularly the regional station in the Northwest where we were discussing the implementation of CAPS. The majority of teachers welcome the orientation, and the majority of teachers and subject advisors are saying the reason why your grade 1 to 3 ANA results improved in the manner that they did in 2012. It's because the curriculum is specified. It's because the training has taken place more or less as expected. So this is the anecdotal evidence that we have. A survey will be conducted, I think, the DDME, as well as ourselves at DBE, want to carry out a survey on the implementation of CAPS. And I think at that time, will be from an empirical evidence be able to tell you as to what is the situation. Okay, and the next one then is the question asked by Honorable Smile. Honorable Smile. How can I forget Honorable Smile?
Smart.
Oh, it's because it's smart.
Smart.
Okay. Well, improving quality it's an ongoing journey. We acknowledge, we remind us every time by DG, by the Minister, by the Deputy Minister, by the National Planning Commission, that the overall performance of our completion rate at high school level looks good. It's even comparable internationally with the UK, US, close to Japan at 93% of course we are going there. But when it comes to quality, it's an area that we need to improve. But we are also improving in that area. The number of bachelors are also improving and so on. But as the DD correctly indicated, we're also looking at overall and quality improvement at the lower end of the system. In other words, your lower grades and so on. So quality is an issue that we are focusing on. For instance, our engagement with district and provincial officials, our emphasis this year was around improving quality but also making sure that we attend to the area of excellence. And I think the team's report also indicated that we need to improve on quality and excellence. So it's something that we are doing, it's an area that we are doing something about. The next one is, what are we doing about needs of teachers in special education needs? The teacher development program for this financial year, unlike the previous financial year, has prioritized providing skills in terms of sign language, providing skills to teachers in terms of Braille. That is from a teacher development point of view. And then in terms of the general support that we provide to learners, since 2006, the National Department, in conjunction with National Treasury, introduced earmarked funds called Strengthening of Special Schools to provide a range of assistive devices to learners in our schools, over and above Braille. The challenge, honorable members, as we have demonstrated to you the last time when we presented that comprehensive, long PowerPoint presentation, provinces took advantage of this in different ways. Some provinces utilized the money correctly. Some never took advantage of the money that was made available to them. But we continue to encourage them to prioritize supporting learners with special education needs to make sure that all of them are supported in terms of the assistive devices that they require for teaching and learning to take place. DG, then the next one, the subject advisor one, I have responded to it. And then the skills. A learner at matric must emerge with a set of skills. Well, let me use what the DG and the minister usually say. Basic education provides basic knowledge and skills for learners to continue, with either training in different areas, but being able to demonstrate the basic skills that are provided there. And I think so far the objectives of the curriculum seem to indicate that the knowledge, the requisite knowledge and skills is indeed embedded in the curriculum. And in the main, learners who emerge out of the system do have those skills. But those learners are not necessarily ready for the job market because the basic education system provides only basic skills for knowledge and skills.
Looking at work readiness, now what do you do? Because sometimes learners just go to grade 12 and they wouldn't like to go to the FET or universities. Yeah. Is there anything in between that you are doing to prepare them for job market?
Well, what I can say is that currently we are strengthening our provisioning of technical education. As you'd know that we changed, I think, in 2008 from the 8 specialized areas to 4. There is a ministerial task team working on that, which will probably strengthen the current provisioning. But apart from that, schools of skills, which are in the main of special schools, we are also looking at recognizing the kind of learning that is happening in those schools, which will provide basic skills like hairdressing, you know, et cetera, and et cetera. So that's what we are doing in the system. I hope that will assist in terms of providing the very basic skills that can afford some of the learners who are unable to progress to earn a living. Karikude, I can only say, as the DD indicated, I'll go back and we will correct this. Ntate Kganyago is absolutely right. We will deal with this matter. In terms of technical high schools, DG, in fact, Ntate Kganyago requested for Mr. Parayaki's numbers from me. Little did I know that the inquiry was about technical schools. Yeah. Yeah, so the two of us will deal with this matter and will most certainly come back to you.
Sorry, Chino, grade R?
Oh, grade R.
Please don't speak because I wanted to do grade R now.
Okay.
Because I'm marking off each answer given to the question. And yours is not just marked off here with grade R. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
No, I'm sorry. I don't know how I left that one.
I don't know.
Well, let me also say, formal grade R, in terms of our definition, is grade R offered at public schools and independent schools. And there is a curriculum for that, which is part of the national curriculum statement. And I also say, we've now introduced the curriculum framework for even 0 to 4 year old. Which is a cohort of learners that are even outside the schooling system. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot. Members, I don't want you to interrupt. Next time I'll bring a red pen and just mark off like this because I'm marking off. Now I'm not going to allow you yet.
But I haven't...
I'm not going to allow you. The DG, I'm not sure who you want to interrupt. Now waiting for questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Two questions. I'll do quickly. The one regarding the 3 categories of passes for the NSC. Basically, in each of the 3 categories, all learners have to pass their home language at 40%, irrespective of what they do in terms of the other requirements. So that's a common that runs through the 3 different categories.
Mm-hmm.
But for the certificate, you are required to get 40% in 3 subjects, and 30% in 3 other subjects. And if if your own language is different from the language of the institution you're going to, then you need to pass your LOT at 30%. That's your second language. So that's the minimum to get a metric pass. For the diploma, it's basically four subjects need to be passed at 40%. And that means you need another two at 30% or better. And on the bachelor's, which is for higher education, on the diploma you can you'll be able to go to a university of technology. On the bachelor's, you need four subjects at 50%. That doesn't guarantee you entrance because the universities have their own criteria, but you need to pass the other two subjects at a minimum of 30% or better. But you need the four subjects at 50% and better. Then on to the second question, which was referring to the infrastructure, the norms and standards and where we are. Basically, the public comment process closed. The consultation and headlag as well have been completed. But basically, in terms of the assessment of the comments and inputs that were made, the stakeholders that commented basically rejected the draft that was put out for public comment. And in discussion in the department, it was agreed to request the complainant that took the sector to court to ask for an extension. And the latest we have is that I think that has been declined, and they are considering going back to the through litigation. So the department is also consulting its lawyers as well.
Yes, Chair, I'm just going back to a question I did ask you about on the infrastructure.
Yes, Chair, I asked against what measure or against what norm was the percentage of schools complying with basic minimum infrastructure measured? And that hasn't been answered.
Okay. Apologies, Chair. Basically, I would like to not use the word norm. We have what we refer to as a document that is called a guideline for planning for school infrastructure, which contains the specifications which you want to refer to it as a norm, is against which we measure what would be a school having facilities or lacking of facilities. That's what we measure that against. So the 55% would be, in terms of the school monitoring survey, would indicate that a school has either met the minimum or we still have more work to do in providing facilities. So if there is a norm that comes in tomorrow, it would probably be the guideline that would be then adopted as a norms and standards.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. There are two questions for me. The one is around participation in Sasuke and the schools. The invitations are sent widely, especially for Sasuke. We send it through the districts, but also to the schools themselves and also on our website. The participation is based on the willingness of the schools to participate in Sasuke. In the school leagues, in the financial year that we were reporting on, we had asked for registration. But honourable members will recall that they requested us to drop the registration process and encourage schools to participate while. So that's what we're doing this year. We haven't asked the schools to register before for the school leagues. In terms of the NSNP, it's the same procurement processes of government that apply even in NSNP. In addition to the conditions that are obtaining in DORA, etc. But what we'll do, Honourable Chair, is to investigate the case that Honourable Mboyzane is talking about and revert back to you.
The time is a bit short, but if there is any follow-up, just make it like 1-1-1. We start it. Just make sure 1-1-1. Not 2-2.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two, but a short.
Okay, the first one is the early retirement. I had when the
the teacher was responding that they're encouraging teachers to take early retirement. Do they consider the fact that when you take early retirement, it affects your pension? What provision is there? Because I know there was a time when there was an excess of teachers, they were encouraging them to leave, yes, and there was this thing that was called package. Is there anything like that now to encourage them to leave the system? Then the second one is on the road, where there is no road to school, and we're responding to the question whereby we're saying the infrastructure backlog is caused also by where there are no roads to schools. What I want to find out is that how are the DBE officials or, visiting the schools if there are no roads? If they are not, how are they accessing the school? Thank you.
Thank you. And I think onto the early retirement, you should add on, there are teachers back in the system again that took early retirement. You know, things like that. Thank you, Chairperson. On administration, Chairperson, we're talking about thing of vacant posts. We are concerned even excluding. Chairperson, we have been with acting DDGs, acting whoever, for quite some time now within the department. What is happening? Why is it taking so long to fill in this post? I feel these are the critical posts. I feel these are critical posts, Chairperson. Really, for me, I don't see a need. Why do we keep on having people acting for quite a long time? Whereas we do have that period of 3 to 6 months at least, what is happening with our department. Last Chairperson, I am referring to the SCIP. Do you remember in the first quarter report, they talked school capacity and innovation program. Each had a good program. We're all excited, but we've never heard anything on that. What is happening? Did you kick that? What is happening? Where are we? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I evidence that Mr. Mweli missed the thrust of my question on school library. I wanted to understand the 51%. Where is it in terms of rural, urban, whatever? Thanks.
Chair, before I get ruled out of order, is this a follow-up question on the questions we asked before?
Yes, it's
fine. Okay. I want to come back then to it was a comment, but I would like to turn it into a question, and that is on the forms to profile the teachers. I hate that I feel so sad when I read these reports. There are 26,000 odd teachers. We know the profile of about 1,000. Because we've got forms. Are we dishing out forms at schools, asking teachers to fill them in and gathering them in and then capturing them? That is archaic. Surely we've got a better way to profile our teacher cohort. If I could just understand what we plan to do.
Mr. Sivrian's not well. We'll... No, Mr. Sivrian's not well. We'll...
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, you know, earlier I wanted to stop me when I wanted to ask the question. I will ask it now. It's with regard to the quality, Chairperson, including learner performance. I wanted to understand from the department, where do you start? Where are you starting? Where are you now with regard to, making plans to improve the quality? There is the last sentence, which makes me yakara. Is this one? Yes, no, it makes me too. So there are more questions, many questions. It actually challenges the department to say, we are not convinced that your interventions at this point in time respond to the recommendations of the National Development Plan. Because if it was like that, I would have liked to hear what are you doing about NEDU. Right? My question, Chairperson. No, it's one question. No, it's still the same question. I'm just explaining myself. Yeah. So a foundation faith, we need to see a shift of mind, of money, of everything towards foundation faith. And we do not see that. So that last sentence in the conclusion part, maybe the department must come back on the NDP and explain in what sense do they respond to the NDP recommendation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a request on the rejection of the proposed draft by the department on the norms and standards by those bodies. Can we be furnished, or is it possible, to know on what aspects of that department draft do they object to, if we could have that document, or is it, what is it, legal term use? And also, just lastly, DG, I did hear this part of my question, but I missed it when I went out. Where schools have been supplied with tools to assist them to fight against absenteeism, late coming, but these have been rejected by teachers because they argue that these are not going through the chamber. What is your response and action?
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to correct you that instead of assigning a follow-up question.
No, I don't have a question.
You don't have a real question. Okay, then the question is on this. I think it's 15 minutes.
All right.
Sorry, yeah.
I just asked a question. I was just thinking, I very much allow the teaching in South Africa. And maybe you need to exercise me in people so that we don't have people coming from this country talking about grade art not being existing, because they are. I think I know for a fact, unless they accounted the task force when I was here, we do have grade art and a link to private books. Am I right? I just wanted to clarify this to me through the perspective. Thank you.
It's the last round, I think. You might start, and I think Mr. Wele has to answer certain questions.
Pardon me?
Yeah, all right. Do my technical help.
Just some clarity on this issue. I'm not quite clear about the answer. Because when I phoned Adaiti, I called because he's the one who, when we were attending a workshop, went out and then later on came some figures and started collecting, and I don't know whether I'm wrong.
Because
I wanted to make a follow-up on that just to check how far is this thing. Now, I don't know. Obviously, well, my wife can go and work on it.
Now he's
my wife. When I talked to him, maybe he missed this point. When I said I wanted Mr. Padash's home, I was just trying to get to understand how far is this thing, because later on my house might be burned there because I'm haunted. You people are any money, in wheelbarrows and so on. You are not doing anything for us. I'm not doing it for political reasons. I think you must be very
clear.
In terms of gaining a cause. The thing is, if your child does not help the marks, and the marks are improvised, now, like Mr. Mawel has just indicated that we give basic skills. Now, he doesn't have good basic skills. If he doesn't have good basic skills, he really wants to go to the university. The money is there. But now, he doesn't have those skills that we expect him to be having when he goes into an institution. because the masks were improvised. My understanding of improvised masks, I don't know how they were coined and so on.
Don't worry. Mr. Patrach is going to speak now to you. Of course, he is the person that made the commitment. Mr. Sobhraj? Don't worry, there is something between the two of you, Mr. Sobhraj.
Okay.
You were not there that day.
Yes.
All right, so you don't need to answer
this.
Fine.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Again, I'll answer in the order in which they've been asked, starting with Honorable Member Maluleke. Let me just clarify, because it may not have come across clearly. We haven't started that process yet. It's important. So we're not encouraging teachers to take early retirement. Very early. Important for me to clarify that. Because we really don't want to go into a newspaper that we're starting a process of asking teachers to retire early. That would cause a huge problem. What I said, and I explained in detail, we're thinking about options. This is one of the options. I must emphasize that point. We're far from there. So obviously there won't be these instruments and that sort of thing. We're simply saying this is a way in which you can smooth out things. So I really want to clarify that issue, so there's no misunderstanding on that one. And indeed, when we do that, we will take into account the pension issues that were done before and obviously be done now. We'll take into account shortages of subjects, so you don't have teachers with certain subjects taking this package and so forth. So all those things happen. In fact, at the moment, in the public service, you do have a system of early retirement that's offered across the public service. And in that way, they do give people credit for your pensionable service. So you don't, it's not as if you're leaving at a particular age. So that happens. So clearly that will be taken into account. But I must emphasize that this is not policy at this point in time. The second question I remember raises is if we don't have a route to a school that's got a backlog, how have they been visited? That's very important. The point is, I don't think they're visited. That's the problem. That's the big problem we're sitting with. So it's not just a route that we need to build to rehabilitate the school, which is important. It's about access. So you see now in our programs, we identify those schools. And we got, as part of the program I spoke about, going to district and identifying schools with dire needs. For example, no road, no bridge, a little bit to cross the river, etc. We identifying those. Then we've got MOA signed with various departments. We want to bring in the Department of Defense there to assist with bridges. We've got correctional services on board. So we're looking at this thing across government. Obviously, roads is the responsibility of the local municipality, and we're addressing that. But still, you can't have learners traversing a river when you know there's rains, etc., because there's no road and no bridge. So these are issues that we must address. One of them is absolutely right. It's not simply about infrastructure. It's about visiting schools, and it is indeed a problem with some schools. The other issue as well is that it's not simply about there's a school built a road, because some of these are very small schools that actually shouldn't be existing. And so it links up to the school rationalization program. If there's an alternative course enough for learners, we deal with that issue. So again, it's not automatic that if you discover a school, especially a small school in a rural area, mountainous area, you are going to build a road. You've got to say, is that school justified in that area? So it's got to be a very planning issue that we're addressing. But it is a serious problem. On the Gina is made the case very strongly for the DDG C position. I should indicate that in this, all DDG positions are filled except Brand C. And we advertised, we interviewed, and we didn't find any of the candidates suitable for this particular position. Mr. Mwani at that time was deployed in Eastern Cape as part of our intervention team. When the nature of the intervention changed and was brought back to national, the minister transferred him into this position of Brand C because he's able to deal with it. Whereas the candidates that applied weren't able to deal with it. Just to clarify, Mr. Mwani didn't apply for that post. I'm not saying he was not appropriate for the position. So certainly that is a priority for the minister for that position and chief director positions below that that have been vacant. Some of these positions on the chairperson with advertised, but it's not easy to get people. And sometimes in a public service, you're tempted because people applied,
you apply the best of among them, and that's when you make a big mistake. Because you're not going to do anyone a favor by appointing the best among a bad cohort of applicants. So very often you've got to go out again in order to do that. For example, we also struggled to appoint a chief director position in one of the branches too, and we had hunting there to get the right person. And it's paying off because we think the next person interviewing or people, you know, is qualitatively better than what we had. So it does have to do that as well. I must say, on the road, you know, with embarrassment, I don't know what this Capacity and Innovation Program is. I don't know if any of the other DDGs know about it. I don't know who reported on that one here. Was it Mr. Mawe? On the Capacity? Okay, we'll look at our presentations and see where that comes from. Honorable Bikoba's question is clarified now, school libraries, you know, where does the problem exist, most acute, rural, urban, etc. Again, where we can supply data in terms of what we have. That will be more accurate, yeah. And the last one raised the point about forms. Look, there's a number of ways we should be profiling. The system we're sitting with is about 400,000 individuals that must be profiled. You can very often either profile people instead of a one-on-one interview, and you profile. And clearly that's not feasible in our system. Time and money will be immense. So you've got to use a form and system and then try to deal with instances where you think the information forthcoming is not genuine. We also use Excel, which is our payroll system, to cross-check and cross-compare that information. But if there are other ideas on the chairperson, we'll welcome those sincerely, because it's just about this is a very important issue that we're dealing with, and we want to do it properly. On the slides, quality, where are we now? Not eventually responding to the NDP, and we need to shift resources to the foundation phase. Let me say, Honorable Chairperson, that concluding sentence of the presentation is correct. We have been informed by the NDP. And I say this with conviction, because when the NDP was developed, it was developed in conjunction with DBE and flowed largely from the action plan to 2014. So already, DBE's work influenced the NDP, largely. There are two additional things in the NDP that's not immediately apparent and explicit in the action plan to 2014. And this we're addressing. For example, the one thing was about appointment of principals, appointment of senior officials. It was about visiting each school and offering support. And that one is taken, and you see one of our primary interventions now in the district approach I've spoken about, where we're supporting dysfunctional schools. We want to visit all of these schools. In fact, the ICMS people are going up to profile the schools. In addition to that, we're saying quick profiling of what schools lack, which is extremely important at this point in time. And we're doing that. We're looking at mentorship programs for principals, to support them in terms of their delivery. So clearly, the approach to the NDP is to say, here's a recommendation which came from the Commission, engage, interpret, operationalize this recommendation, and look at how it can work. And that's done in conversation with the Planning Commission and with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. So clearly, it won't be an instance where you see the title necessarily next to our party. But I repeat that I say with conviction that we are responding fully to the NDP and taking it on board. Indeed, the recommendations of the NDP flow in the main from the action plan to 2014. And our focus indeed is on the foundation phase, but clearly in a schooling system, you cannot shift towards one phase at the expense of others. You can't do that. There's a recent example, it's not exactly the same in history, but the World Bank said, look, focus on primary schooling and don't worry too much about secondary and higher education. And that caused huge problems in countries. So, and I'm not saying I don't remember saying that. So you've got to, it was correct, focusing on primary education. But the way it was done was at the expense of other levels. And again here, we can't focus on foundation phase at the expense of other phases. focus and place emphasis on the foundation phase, indeed, is the cornerstone of what we do. If you look at the action plan and the delivery agreement, it confirms that. Announcing standards and comments there, I'm sure we can provide a summary of that in writing after we go back. And then in terms of the tools, go to the chamber. I can't answer that question.
Yes.
Okay. Anu Mushwana dealt with an issue. I think that was a comment. And then in terms of Mr. Pariachi, Anu Khanyako, or Mr. Mweli, we'll deal with that one. But it's a department, so we'll sit.
I think we'll after the meeting, because it seems as though they're going to do it now in writing thing, so that when he walks around, he can show this letter in the shadow. So I'm happy about that. I don't think there's anything else that we need from the department. It's just this that you have to bring to us in writing. But I just wrote down here, the meeting with the provinces and DBE, well, it's going to be important. Because every time, you know, we are going into elections, but we'll have to look at that. Yeah, and I had such a meeting, and I had it over to my WASP just to think about it. When? And then we're supposed to do this integrated early childhood development plan. Because look, something came from the presidency, and you have something in the department. Let us speak to it and let everyone have clarity on that. So I think that will have to be a separate meeting. Then there was, when it comes to our learners, you know, are we making them marketable? I know there is investigation or commission at the moment, I'm not sure, but we have one. But after that, we can speak with, find out, you know, that we can be more informed about that. The implementation plan when it comes to libraries, I noticed that Ms. Mweli said, you know, we speak about it, but it's not sure where they should speak about it. But if there's an implementation plan that you'd like to share with us, I'll think we put it in somewhere. We have to think on this extra classes, you know, the department has to think on that. What should be done? Because I remember when I taught, we used to have classes on a Saturday, but it was only like for, you know, mathematics. And it wasn't like to complete the curriculum, but to just give the children extra knowledge. So we must think about that seriously, because people were complaining in January about this. The children don't have time to rest. And then e-education will have to fit in somewhere too. And then the number of subject advisors, I think you are wise that. And then when it comes to the bursaries, that will have to be discussed too. Because I think there's a genuine problem if the students are only receiving July. And we are meeting IA Education next week, and I'm sure it will come up. So the department have just prepared themselves on that to the next week. So that, you know, because I think, I don't know IA Education very well, but I think registration is in phase two. And it means children have to take the limits, or students have to take money out of their own pockets. And yeah, they are just out. So I think the board will have to think about that and see how are you going to answer us on that and make us feel satisfied that something is being done. I would like to thank. I didn't ask a question. That's okay. I'd like to thank the department for this report. It was like outstanding, was long overdue. But we have to do our quarterly report. And, you know, for giving us such a comprehensive report, and even, I'm sure, with the second round, that some people are satisfied with the way you answered the questions. I'd like to thank the members for being present. because normally we have all the members in this meeting, and I'd like to thank the department. And we don't expect you to come every week, Mr. Mawir. Only if you are instructed to come by the DG, then you come. But we don't expect you every week. And I'm still worried about who found who, about the outfit people are wearing today. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Is the meeting
attended?
Is the meeting attended?
Okay.